Tommy Timing
is a proud member
of the pod.
Stop screwing it up.
Of the Comics Podcast Network.
Bitch. Welcome to episode 108 of Comic Timing, a comics podcast voted to the average comic book fan from the average comic book fan. Joining us, Brent Cassino, rotating panel of guests, and myself, Ian Levinstein, discuss whatever comes to mind, time after time, here on Comic Timing. Remember that reset button that DC and Marvel love using? Well, we talk about it on this episode, as everything old becomes new again. Barry Allen replaces Wally West. Hal Jordan replaces Kyle Rayner. Is it a good thing for comics? Is it a bad thing for comics? Or is it a neutral thing for comics? Make up your own damn mind. Here now, Comic Timing. Hey there, folks. My name's Ian Levinstein, and welcome to episode 108 of Comic Timing. And this episode is packed to the gills with joy and fun here, and it was planned in exactly 9 hours, according to Facebook. So, hey, we're special here. We're joined by the co-host, not co-host, co-host, Mr. Brent Cassina.
Hey, I've been co-host for a while, my friend.
Oh, I know that, but it's your freaking tagline.
Why are you going back?
Line.
Why are you going back?
It's your tagline. You accept that.
I thought we got past this.
Fine, Mr. Co-host. Are you happy to just be called co-host?
No. You start over. Put this fucker in the back.
I've been calling you co-host, not co-host, co-host for the past 4 years, and now you're taking shit over it. What the hell?
I don't know.
Hi,
proceed.
Brent. Hi, Brent. How are you?
Proceed.
Are you doing well?
Irked. I'm irked right now.
You're irked.
Irked. I-R-K-E-D.
At least you're not irkled.
Do you know I do that?
Oh, dear God. And moving on, let's go to the guys who haven't actually been on an episode via Skype yet of Comic Timing. They've been in person, but this time I don't have to see their faces when they make comments. It's Adam and Comfort. Hey!
Was that a good thing?
Hey!
You made it sound like you're so happy that you don't have to see their face.
I know. What's up, guys?
Oh, nothing but the sky.
Yeah, we're just working on the rainbow in the dark as we talk to you.
Fun. Woo! I'll have my comments soon, I promise.
No, that's fine. We got them from Chris, and they're happy, and we're not even on that issue yet.
Yay.
We're on issue 1 right now.
Yay. I'm not behind yet. Yay. All right. Also on this call, returning after a long absence, Mr. Chris Johnson of whatever podcast he's currently doing. What's up, Chris?
Hey, Ian. Hey, everybody.
I can't keep track. Which one is it now?
I actually am without a podcast at the moment.
Oh.
I've attempted several, but time and nostalgia for my first podcast have made it hard to move on, you know?
Yeah, so everybody's still clamoring for that Spider-Man, and you're just like, shut up, brand new day.
Well, not in those so harsh terms as you seem to be putting out of my mouth.
Yeah, I'm a lot harsher than you are, as if you couldn't tell.
I don't know, some of those later Amazing Spider-Cast episodes, I'd give you a run for your money there.
Well, welcome to a show where you get to actually bitch and moan about things.
All right.
And from the Fixer's Hideout and quite possibly 12 other podcasts, Mr. Daryl. What's up, Daryl?
For this episode, refer to me as Chocolate Thunder. That's my stage name.
Chocolate Thunder. Holy crap. Do I want to know what stage?
I can't go into that right now. The litigation is done. So
Oh, man. Wow. Now I'm scared and don't know if I want to continue.
That's... And the lights are out in my room.
Oh, even better. Well, fantastic. Well, this episode's over. Thanks for everybody for joining us. And I'm going to go hide behind the counter. All right, great. All right. Well,
good night, everybody.
Woohoo! And this episode of Comic Timing is sponsored by Discount Comic Book Service. That's DCBS over at dcbservice.com. And the discounts continue to be very discounted this month, as I will go through the review corners here. First off of Marvel, Wolverine numero uno. I know there's been like 7 Wolverine number ones over the years, but this one counts, we swear. Written by Jason Aaron, penciled by Renato Guedes, and cover by Jay Lee. I'm sure I'm butchered Renato Guedes' name, but whatever. 75% off for 99 cents Only $3.99 regular price, so we're getting it for 99 cents here. It is the return of Wolverine. Dark Wolverine gets his own title. They redo the numbering entirely, and you get yourself a brand new Wolverine number one to read. So isn't that nice? And Jason Aaron's written Wolverine in the past, so chances are he knows how to write the character by now. At least we certainly hope so. And Freedom Fighters number one is the DC pick. Another returning here as Palmiotti and Gray return to Uncle Sam and the Freedom Fighters, dropping the Uncle Sam and the from the title, just being Freedom Fighters number one this time. Art by Travis Moore and Trevor Scott, cover by Dave Johnson, and a 1 in 10 variant by Shane Davis. But the regular price, the regular issue, the regular cover, is 50% off at DCBS for $1.49, regular price of $2.99. And this is an ongoing. This is not a miniseries like the previous Uncle Sam and the Freedom Fighters were. So we've got ourselves an ongoing story here, written by Palmiotti and Gray. Who knows how long it'll be around? We shall see. And Mouse Guard, the Black Axe, number one, is our indie pick for the month out of Archaea Press. David Peterson returns with a brand new Mouse Guard miniseries. One of six here. It's $1.92 on DCBS for 45% off of the regular price of $3.50. And if you're a fan of Mouse Guard, or even if you've never even read Mouse Guard before, for some reason haven't even heard of it, this is probably a good jumping on point, because most of these Mouse Guard series are one and done, or not really too continuity intensive. You can probably pick it up here with Mouse Guard, the Black Axe. So I would recommend doing so there. And of course, if you are a first time user of DCB service, of DCBS, well, go ahead and use the Comic Timing discount code to get an additional 8% off on your first order if you use the promo code CT8. That's CT8. Only for first-time users. Remember that, okay? So don't try and pull something big on DCBS. Only the first time. 8% off on your first order with DCB service. Thank you very much for the sponsorship. Discount comic book service, dcbservice.com. And before we get into the main episode here, also a quick reminder that if you like hearing my voice for some reason, this past week, Broken Sea Audio Productions released Twilight Theater Episode 3, The Cloud, where I play the character of Drake. So if you're interested in hearing me outside of the world of Comic Timing and in an audio drama form as opposed to my usual ramblings, well, you can check it out over at BrokenSea.com, and they'll have a link right there to Twilight Theater. It's the most recent post on there, and if it's not the most recent post, then go to the one before that, and you'll get a link to BrokenSea.com/Twilight Theater, and you can just download it or listen to it right there on the site. They've got a nice flash player just like we do on the Comic Timing site. So that's all I have to say right now. Listen to the episode. Seriously, listen to the episode after all that rambling. Please, thank you. This episode, we're titling it Everything Old is New Again, and not just because Chris is back on an episode. We're talking about the changes that have been going on in Marvel and DC of late, bringing back titles and characters and people behind the cape and cowl that hadn't been for a while, and whether or not this is a good way for comic books to go, whether we feel that this is a step backwards or a step forwards. And that's stuff like, for instance, like the Avengers, Bruce Wayne eventually being Batman again. Come on, we're not stupid. We know what's happening. Barry Allen being The Flash, even though Wally West is around. Is it an oversaturation? That sort of stuff. Birds of Prey coming back, which might be the one positive part of this episode. You never know. Avengers, yada, yada, yada. We'll talk a little bit about Avengers and Secret Avengers, but not that much, because Brent and I have got a review corner coming up soon where we'll go completely in-depth with the Avengers books. But we'll at least talk about them returning to sort of like a happy Avengers versus a new Avengers, even though one of the titles is still called New Avengers, which really confuses the hell out of me. You cancel New Avengers and replace it with New Avengers.
Yeah.
What?
Perhaps we should institute a statute of limitations on how long you can call something new.
Yeah, after like 3 years, is it still new?
It's the kind of new.
Oh, okay.
If after, not even after 3 years, remember, it's after 60 years, is it still new?
Mm. Well, and same old guy.
Can someone explain to me why the finale of New Avengers had pages from Secret Invasion in it?
Because they wanted to.
And they charged me $5?
Yeah.
Daryl, it was magic, man.
Is that what it was? That I, because I
magic.
Sworn, they call it New Avengers Finale, but I could have sworn I already bought those books that had those pages in it in the back.
Well, that was more of a celebration of the title in general, I thought. I mean, it didn't take away from the story. There was still story being told on it. It was just old images, you know, being repurposed. And some of them were new. There were one or two images in the back there that were actually new pieces of work, or at least weren't used inside of an issue before. So you weren't being entirely tanked.
But that one, no, I was paying for.
A lot of them were used in the issues.
Oh, yeah?
House of M, Secret Invasion, mm-hmm. New Avengers 1, New Avengers 6,
mm-hmm.
and there was one more and something else.
And one of them was the cover of, like, New Avengers 50 or whatever.
Right. There you go.
Okay. All right. Well, we were sort of hosed, but at least there was a story to go along with the pictures. At least they weren't just, you know, putting pinups in it and charging money for it.
Yeah.
All right. Come on. Well, plenty of time to be bitchy and moany, Daryl, all right? You'll have your time.
Okay.
All right. Well, first up, before we go into the Marvel stuff, I want to go DC first because it feels like there have been some major changes going on in that. And one of the people on this call I know has a very, very specific stance on the Green Lantern books. But we'll start with Flash first. Yeah, no idea who I'm talking about with that specific comment.
Me?
Yeah.
My ears are burning.
So we'll start it off with Flash, okay? Up until this point, up for the last 20 years or so, we've had Wally West in the role of the Flash. And since Crisis on Infinite Earths, we had Wally West in the role of the Flash. Then we had Bart Allen take over for like 2 minutes and he died, whatever. But the important thing is that Barry Allen's story seemed to have been told. You know, it seemed to have ended in death. You know, usually that's a good sign that things are over for a character. And then, 25 years after the fact, they decide to bring Barry Allen back and make him the head Flash while Wally's off in a corner, maybe doodling on a piece of paper, whatever he's doing. And it leads me to wonder, is DC Comics actually still trying to get new readers? Because when you bring back a character that the average 12-year-old may have absolutely no idea exists, how are you going to have comic books continue once everyone on this call is dead and gone? And that's what I'm wondering here. I'll start it off with Adam and Comfort. We'll roll on from there. Guys, handle it.
I am torn on this, and I'm torn because of experience. Things that I've heard from people, because my initial thought was very much the same thing. What is the point of bringing back somebody who has been gone so long that you've got two generations of comic readers who never had Barry Allen for their Flash?
Right.
At the same time, though, my experience was that the people who seemed to be most in support of this were people who had never read Barry Allen before and had no experience with the character or really with Flash in general at all prior to this. It was mostly the people who liked Flash and had been reading comics. It was the old fans that thought that it was a stupid idea, and the people who had no idea about Flash that thought that it could be okay.
Well, they didn't have an opinion one way or the other. That was the thing. There was zero opinion on that. Like, we've been seeing that from the anime kids who might read, you know, Flash. They don't really care. Now, the problem is does Barry Allen connect with those readers? And that's really the thing that will sort of remain to be seen, is can he make that impact that makes them eternal fans of Flash, like, you know, some of us have become here.
My general thesis is that you have to do this. I've come to understand that they are maintaining trademarks.
Yep.
They are maintaining merchandising rights. Stories come a distant third or fifth in place of their priorities. And in order to maintain these things, in order to maintain a story that can never end, that has to be an unending soap opera that will run for decades to come, at a certain point, they have to hit the reset button. And that's okay. What I wish is that they would have the balls to just come out and do it for real. Just reset it, get a big explosive finale that wraps up the DC Universe, and then start over.
Right, and really start fresh for a set of new fans. We were even talking today how painfully true, now not all of it, but a lot of what Robert Kirkman says a few years back about new readers coming into comics they need the Marvel and they need the DC, which are well-known characters, to start with, to be with for 5 or 6 years, 10 years even, and then move on to something else. But because we've been playing so hard to one audience, or even moving more directly towards that very hardcore 35-plus audience, we're continually losing those readers, or never even gaining them, mm-hmm. to the point that I don't see young people at Comic-Con. Very rarely.
Right. And for the few people that might actually be young and you know, starting with comic books, up until this particular point, they had seen one guy as the Flash. They had seen Wally West as the Flash in the Justice League comic and a lot of the other portrayals of the Flash in mainstream media over the past couple of years. It had been Wally. And now if they were to, you know, give a chance to a Flash book, they would see a different Flash. They would see a completely different character than the one that they might have maybe gotten to have known at one point or the other. And I would at least say that that would be at least somewhat confusing.
There is another problem that's created there in that they are, from the first couple issues of Flash, and from Rebirth and from what we've seen elsewhere, it appears that there are some adjustments being made to the Barry Allen character to make him more exciting for a modern audience. So one could almost argue, in a sense, that we're not exactly getting back Barry Allen exactly. Mm-hmm. We're getting we're just getting a Flash that can give them a CSI tie-in.
That does seem to be what they're trying to do with the series to start, because according to Geoff Johns, at least, we're going to get more of his his work along with being in the tights. And that's what Barry Allen brings to it. While Wally West has been a mechanic, he's been a police mechanic, he's been 7 or 8 other things, but most of them haven't really been police-related.
Yeah, I think it goes back to what I was saying about how I wish they would have the balls to just completely reset things, because I think a lot of these changes, the going back to old characters, I think a lot of these would be easier to stomach if this really was the first exposure to a new Barry Allen. Mm-hmm. If this was just a new Barry Allen, a new Hal Jordan, a new DCU, where we're getting these old characters, but it's all sort of starting fresh, a kind of an ultimateization of the DC universe, as a way to really just say, we're starting over, let's just do it for real and free ourselves up to tell new stories.
What we had often said that would be, now this would be hard, but it may be the best thing that you could do for comics, because people are so exhausted from the half reboots and sort of reboots, and it's just so wishy-washy, is to take all the comics for, let's say, DC, and say, you know what? We're going to have 100 more issues, and after 100 issues, we're done. All those stories wrapped up, and then you let it sit for a couple of years, and you bring it back. Or you let it set even for 6 months, and you bring it back, and all new stories. Whatever has been going on in these last 60 years, we wrap it up, and we start fresh, and you go another 400 issues. And after 400 issues, you're done again.
We give it the Thor comparison.
Right.
When Thor was getting its most stale, they allowed that series to create this huge epic build-up to basically the end of Thor. And they killed everybody off, ended the series. It was done. And then for years, there was no Thor. So then when you bring him back, people are actually excited about the character again. And not only that, but the creators are excited about the character again, because he hasn't been around for so long. He's fresh again.
All right. And it would allow people to do something new and different with the characters each time around. And it would speak to whatever generation was reading those issues for, say, 400 issues.
Right.
Then you'd start another generation.
I totally get what you're saying with that one, and that's why I want to maybe get Daryl in on this a little bit, because he just got done with his Lost rants for 47 times, so he might actually have an opinion on the setting a specific point and then letting it run until that point, and then maybe starting it up again after that. Daryl, do you think that would be a good way for DC to go, to perhaps keep things fresh so that people know exactly where an endpoint is going to be, and then have a chance to reboot, restart with whatever character they want without having to explain, oh, he was dead, but he's better now?
Well, are you talking about ending a whole line of books, or are you just talking about end one particular story, or was it just one book?
We're talking about taking all of DC and give it one big epic finale. Like, if originally, as we understand it, Crisis on Infinite Earths back in the 80s was supposed to end DC Comics, and then they were going to do a complete reboot. But at the last minute, they chickened out. So you got some books like Superman, Wonder Woman, completely restarted with Man of Steel and the, I think it was Perez Wonder Woman, which started then, but completely restarted. But then other things didn't. So you sort of got a half and half.
Right.
And that made things confusing, and it gets wishy-washy, which is sort of like what's going on now, where, well, we want Barry back, but we're not getting rid of Wally. So now we've got a lot of characters sitting around in the Flash universe, but we're only going to use a couple of them. So everybody else is just going to sit there on their thumbs with nothing to do. Give DC Comics a huge, epic, amazing end, and then be done. And then start over.
Finish all those storylines?
Everybody knows you're doing it anyway.
Right.
You're rebooting all the time. You're whitewashing stories you don't want to have to think about anymore. So just do it instead of this halfway thing, which insults all of us and is never going to please everybody. Let's be honest.
Never.
Well, Daryl?
You know, it sounds good. Part of that sounds good. But then you have to think about there are still people that still like, which I'm one of them, a lot of the storylines that's going on. Like, I remember when Barry series ended because it wasn't selling. I remember reading it then, and I'm one of the first people to pick up the new series when they restarted it. And I collected all of it all the way through Wally, and then I was there when it got stale, and then they had to pretty much put Wally to the side because he wasn't selling anymore either, and move it to when someone had a better idea for Barry, because that's what it was, when somebody had a better idea to bring him back. That's when he came back. You know, it's hard to just say, let's just end it. This is a corporate entity. Just to say end it, because there are people still buying these characters. Now, even with young people, every time I go to New York Comic Con, I still see young people. I mean, I know not as many young people as they used to be, but I still see young people buying comics.
Right.
I still see young people in stores. I don't know if that's because I'm in the city, you know, it's a more populated area, but I just don't see, I mean, DC just ending an entire run of books to restart them again. I can see something like they do an Ultimate Universe, something like that, and try it. But even with that, you wind up getting it starts getting complicated because you start gathering up a lot of continuity.
Right, and even with the Ultimate Universe, they had a reset. You know,
right.
The most recent, you know, the Ultimate Comics was supposed to be a new jumping on point for new readers, and it doesn't really work because there's still continuity to it. It wasn't a complete clean reboot. This is a new, you know, a new series,
a new
universe.
I would say the thing with that is that you've got two different things. Like, you know, if you were to go back in 60 years of regular comics, to get all those back issues, to know all that story, that's like an impossible entanglement to do. But for the Ultimate stories, those were restarted, I think, for a different reason. And beyond that, you can really just go and read the Ultimate stories whenever you want to. So if you want to start reading Ultimate Spider-Man, you know what? They're there in trade paperback, and you can start whenever. You can find that stuff online. And that's what I find kids doing, is finding the trade paperbacks online or whatever, reading them that way. And Ultimate Spider-Man is always going to have a great jumping on point. To make that new one, I don't think that helped anything. I think all that did was really make a lot of kids who were reading it angry, because they didn't like their reboot. If they had let that story possibly end, you know, by issue 400, would have had a much happier fan base than the people who've just gone through reboot after reboot. You know, we find anime fans whose stories end much happier with what they're reading, because they get closure. You don't get closure with American comics. You can't.
Right. Well, Brent, what about you? I mean, you started comics around the same time that I did. A little bit after that, because you started in what, 2000 thereabouts.
Hush.
What? It's true though. Hush. Oh, sorry.
No.
Sorry. That was the name of the storyline. My bad. So you're telling me to shut the fuck up.
Perhaps.
But, all right, so you started with Hush. So now here you are. You've been reading for a few years. Do you prefer the soft reboot or the hard reboot? Do you prefer the new character taking over the mantle, or do you prefer completely starting from scratch and still having those previous stories to work off of if you want to?
I don't know. I mean, they killed Blue Beetle, and then they brought on the new one, and I loved that series. And so I like that character. Really could give a shit less about Ted Kord, but that's just... I may be speaking some blasphemous words for you old farts in the room and on the podcast, but, you know, whatever. Hey. It is what it is. So,
yeah. You magnificent bastard.
Young whippersnappers.
Hey, it's the truth, though. I believe that I actually, you know, I myself, even though I know Ted Kord and I knew him before Jaime, I relate a hell of a lot more to Jaime than I do to Ted. It's just the way it goes, because that's quote unquote my Blue Beetle. That's the one I actually picked up the issues of.
Who is this Jaime? I don't know who you're talking about.
He's the guy with the super cool suit. What did Ted Kord have? Nothing.
Hey, he had the Blue Beetle mobile.
Oh wow!
He had a bromance.
So cool.
What? I honestly, you know, the tough thing is there's a lot of nostalgia for things like Blue Beetle cars, and you know, we grow up with our own retardedness.
That's the issue, because they're pandering to the 35 and, you know, the 30 and up audience. There's a lot of nostalgia just from them being old and reading so long that they don't want to take a chance on any new things. And, you know, they had the launch of the Blue Beetle series and did pretty well, and then as soon as that started to peter out, they put him up on you know, what's it called, Brave and the Bold, and he was featured in that, featured in the Brave and the Bold comic at the same time. You know, he's got like two action figures. He's I mean, you know, he's a popular character. He's starting to catch on, and then they just killed it, you know, just done. Sorry dude. And I understand from a sales standpoint, he's still in Teen Titans, but he's just not the same.
Teen Titans isn't the same. That's also a problem.
Yeah, that's kind of a wash too. As far as like Flash goes, I mean, I like the Flash. I dug him in like JLA when he was Wally, and then Wally went away, and I started reading the Abysmal Bilson and DeMeo Bart run, which got a hell of a lot better as soon as Tony Daniel and Guggenheim stepped on, and I'm said that numerous times on the show before, that I would have liked to have seen them continue their run, so on and so forth, but apparently it was only in the plan for that to be a 12 or 13 issue thing.
Yeah.
Only a year. Only then to bring Wally back for, I don't know, a year and a half, and then only then to stop that series and then bring, what's his name?
A week and a half, yeah.
Those dang kids.
The super duper old guy back. What's his name?
Barry Allen.
Barry Allen, right.
Barry. Oh, sorry.
The freaking original, the mighty Allah, the master of all things, Barry Allen Flash. Oh, my gosh. Oh, he's so awesome.
The thing is, Barry did better being dead. Unfortunately, if you look at the continuity, if you want to look at it in those terms, Barry Allen really did need to stay dead, because it speaks to a whole lot of the Flash mythos for him to have been the Flash that gave himself to this incredible thing. But then to bring him back sort of negates all that specialness.
I think the issue with Barry Allen was is that he was such a Silver Age character, and he kind of died at the end of the Silver Age. I mean, if you want to look, I don't know what you call, maybe the Bronze Age or whatever, but you kind of had no modern stories with Barry Allen. And I think they wanted to introduce Barry Allen to people in a way that they didn't have to go back and read the old stuff.
He wore a fucking bow tie.
Because maybe they didn't relate to him, you know what I mean? So then they started doing this time travel bullshit and this alternate dimension and the cosmic treadmill just to bring Barry Allen back, bring Barry Allen back, bring Barry Allen back to get these modern stories. And then finally they were just like, you know what? Forget it.
I'm wearing a bow tie now. What's the problem with the bow tie?
Yeah, I think the 11th Doctor would have some words with you, Ian.
Oh, exactly. Yes, because when I think of fashion and flavor, I turn to the 11th Doctor. My God, he looks like he's wearing his father's clothes.
You leave him alone.
I have no problem with Matt Smith's performance, okay? He just really, really looks like an 8-year-old wearing his 45-year-old father's clothing.
Well, he is 900 years old.
I don't know why he's not jumping on that girl, though. She's hot. I don't care how many lifetimes I've lived. If you're hot, you're hot. I'm sitting in that TARDIS all that time. I'm trying.
That's a completely new conversation for a completely different time, trust me. Let me get Chris into the conversation a little bit, because he hasn't actually had any words yet, and I know that he's the unique guy, because he actually goes back into the Silver Age and reads these Silver Age comic books and has an affinity for them, while I am the schmo who's 26 years old and likes the current stuff. So you've probably got a little bit of an A and a B thing going, because you know Barry Allen and you know Wally West and you know previous, you know, Spider-Man stories and whatever, and you know previous Avengers stories and you know previous DC stories. So where are you in the whole bringing people back thing?
Okay, well, yeah, I love the Silver Age. I mean, I don't know. I just love just how quirky and weird and how basically anything that the writer could think up, they would put on the page. It doesn't matter if you had Batman fighting aliens or the Avengers, I don't know, doing a charity race down New York. I don't even know if that's real, but that anything that
Spider-Man meeting the cast of Saturday Night Live.
Iron Man on skates.
Spider-Man and Hypno Hustle.
Superman fighting Muhammad Ali.
Yes.
Yeah.
Iron
exactly.
Man with a nose.
Like Archie.
Yeah. And it's just that I love that era. I love just how much fun that era is and just how anything goes, you know, during that era and, you know, the art and it just clicks with me, you know, even though I'm only 20 years old. And, you know, if you look at my taste usually run before my time in a whole lot of areas of entertainment.
Gee, you think?
But when it comes to bringing dead people back, I think that, see, I wouldn't want a hardline reboot, because I think that you can use continuity without replacing everything. I mean, I don't like this whole trend of people, because I think it's basically the people, a lot of it is probably the people who are in charge of, you know, guiding the DC universe at the time. I think part of it probably is nostalgia for the past, and part of it is appealing to the adults who are, you know, basically the lifeblood of the comic industry at this point. And just an example, I'm sure we'll get into this later, but with Batman, if you look at Grant Morrison's Batman run, he basically took a bunch of 1950s Batman stories that nobody cared about except me and two other people, and updated them and inserted them back into Batman continuity with a new coat of paint. So even though he was drawing on things that were in the 50s and like totally clashing with people's perceptions of Batman today, he was able to take those elements and modernize them and use them.
Zurinar!
I wish we had Raph. I wish we had Raph now.
Trust me, you don't want Raph.
But I think that you don't have to wholesale, you know, bring back, you know, characters and replace the existing ones. I think you can take elements of continuity that you think would be cool to use, update them, and utilize that history. I mean, there's decades and decades of continuity that's waiting to be, you know, so there's that, you know, story for each character that might have seemed goofy during the 50s, but there's a writer who can see that story and think of how they could use that with modern audiences.
Right.
And I think there's like a couple characters like Batman and Superman who I think should stay with, who originated that role, but there's characters like the Flash and Green Lantern and Blue Beetle and the Atom who I think are open up to having a legacy, having characters, new characters come in and assume those roles for a new generation.
Yeah, and here we are, and I was going to go on this rant eventually, so I might as well go on it now. Here we are at DC, where you've got two changes that have happened recently. Number one, you bring back the original Adam. You bring back Ray Palmer, which I'm perfectly fine with, you know, because Ray Palmer, good character. You know, he went away for a while. He had to go away after what happened with Identity Crisis, and he came back, and that's fine. So you've got two Adams running around, just like you've got two Flashes running around. Now it's 3, now it's 4, now it's 12, whatever. You've got, you know, 1,700 Green Lanterns running around. So I think it's perfectly fine to have two Adams running around. You know, not that big of a deal with that. And then here you are with the Titans, where you go back and you bring back the original Teen Titans as a series. You bring back Donna Troy, you bring back Roy, you bring back Dick, you bring back everybody who was in the, who was on the team. I don't have to name them all. And
yeah.
And then you decide after about 12, 15 issues, they're all doing their own things in the universe. We can't do that anymore. Let's do something different. Let's reboot the Titans entirely. Oh, I know what we haven't done in a while. Let's have a bunch of villains come together and kick people's asses. And the previous Titans team that we spent ages trying to bring back up, they can go do their own things. Why don't we make them Justice League members? That's a good idea. Let's do that. Okay, fine. James Robinson, go ahead. You can have them. We'll see you later. And, you know, then they rip off somebody's arm. I'll get to that later. But, but here we are with the Titans book that has villains in it. And what's the first thing that they do? Well, apparently Eric Wallace turns to DC Comics. And, yes, I'm putting words in his mouth. I don't know if this is exactly how it happened, but I assume it was. Or he went to DC and he said, who can I kill? Who are you okay with me killing in order to prove to everybody that my new team of Titans are badass? And they went, who's not currently in a book? Okay, well, Firestorm's out of the picture because we're using him in you know, Brightest Day, so that's not going to work. If we kill Wally West, we're going to have a Bring Back Wally West campaign in our hands, so we can't really do that too much. What can I do? Oh, yeah! Nobody's using Ryan Choi right now. So they go and kill off a four-year-old character that was probably one of the funnest DC comics that I was reading for a damn long time, and they kill him off because they've got Ray Palmer now. Why do they need two Adams running around? This is backwards thinking, in my opinion. This is the same thing with Jaime Reyes, the same thing with you know, what we previously discussed with The Flash that could be, you know, portrayed as that. But this is the sort of backwards thinking that I don't really understand, you know? Because Ray Palmer doesn't have his own book right now. He might eventually, whatever. But more people are probably familiar with Ryan Choi. Ryan Choi just showed up in Batman Brave and the Bold. And, like, a week later, he's killed in the comic books. So what's the reasoning behind that? Why does this make fiscal sense?
This is the double-edged sword of the B-list character in a continuity that can never end. Because, like you said, there are some characters who can't go away. Bruce Wayne can't go away. Clark Kent can't go away. You know, Wonder Woman can't go away. These things can't be changed. And furthermore, they are going to continuously bring back all of the original characters over time anyway. So Barry Allen will always come back. Hal Jordan will always come back, so on and so on.
Copyright has to be perpetually maintained.
Right. Which means that the only characters that can really have interesting things, lasting things happen to them, are your lower tier characters. Guys like the new Blue Beetle or the new Atom, who a lot of people attach to because their series were so much fun. The problem is that even though their status means that you can really do interesting things with them because they don't have the same kind of locks on the character that other people do, you can do a whole lot more to Ryan Choi than you ever possibly could to you know, Bruce Wayne. Everybody knew immediately, you take Bruce Wayne off the board, he's going to be back in a couple of years at the most, and nothing will have ultimately changed. But Ryan Choi, anything's possible. Nobody knows who this guy is. They just made it. The downside is that attaches us even more to the character, but that character is always the first one on the chopping block because he has the shortest history. And because he has the short history, he doesn't have anybody clamoring for him. He doesn't have anybody in the office that's willing to fight
anyone
for him.
Anyone in the office, I think, is another important.
They don't give the low-tier characters enough time to build the audience, to build the popularity, to build the persona that would make them untouchable. And so every time a new event comes along, and they come along pretty much bi-yearly now, every time a new event comes along, and naturally, every time, they've got to kill somebody off so we know that it's serious. So who's on the chopping block? The most interesting characters they have. Because those are the ones that you can't mess with, because they're the ones that aren't untouchable.
But here we are, and I know times have changed, but does anybody remember when Jay Garrick and Alan Scott were Flash and Green Lantern, and they decided, let's reboot these characters. Let's make new characters that have very little to do with the previous ones, but let's make them, and let's make them our main characters, you know? And they did that, and it worked. and they moved on. And the characters were, the previous characters were still around in one form or another, but these other characters became your new characters. Why can't we do that anymore?
As a matter of fact, it updated the property, didn't it?
Yes, it did.
Made it valid for a whole new audience.
Yeah.
But Jay Garrick and Alan Scott weren't worth money. Jay Garrick and Alan Scott were not cash cows. Jay Garrick and Alan Scott were not going to have movies made about them. Okay. Jay Garrick and it's not the same because the machine didn't work then like it works now. They did not see comic books as a portable IP.
Right.
It was not just about storing trademarks and copyrights and licenses. I mean, it was to an extent because it's always been a business, but the business now is a very different monster than it was back then, and you can't let anything go.
Daryl, what were you going to say there?
Well, there was a lot of a bigger audience back then than there is now. I mean, you really have to be careful with what you do. I mean, this is not a manga audience. This is not that big. The amount of people that are going to keep buying comics, a lot of them are us old heads like me who enjoy some of these characters. But as one that loved, I read all those Ray Palmer stuff and reboots. I hated what they did with Choi. I hated that storyline. I will not pick, and I said I will not pick up Titans because of them killing off the character, because it felt so cheesy and forced the way they did it.
Yeah.
So it can go, I mean, yeah, it is a double-edged sword sometimes where they want to make a character, they want to bring something back and make it exciting, but they can mess it up. And they totally messed it up.
And on the other side of the coin, man, I mean, I know that you feel entirely differently about the other characters that they've messed with recently than I do, because we've had arguments about this in person and we've had arguments over Twitter about it, where I hate what they've done to Roy Harper. And I hate what they've done to Green Arrow, because to me it feels like it's just so forced, along with what the lines of what happened in Titans with Brian Choi is. But I know that you're a big fan of that.
Yeah, I like the change. I like the change that they did with the characters, because the books were not doing well. Mm-hmm. I mean, at the numbers every month, those numbers were going down on those books. They was just sinking lower and lower. It was either cancel the book completely and just end it and kill off Oliver Queen again and then reboot it, or, you know, try to do something to shake it up.
But see, here's the problem is I think I'm with Ian on this, in that I have no problem with them shaking things up and going in different directions to try to raise interest in a property. But ever since probably Identity Crisis, there's been this mentality that to shake things up and to make things interesting, you have to have violence and sex and rape and just terrible things happen to characters to somehow make things interesting. But really, I think it just makes DC look like a bunch of jackasses.
Wow.
You're a Marvel fan, you'd say that anyhow.
No, see, no. Well, I have my own beef with Marvel, and I'm sure we'll get to that.
Yes, we will.
But I mean,
both companies have been doing that since the late '80s all the way to now. That has always been
not as bad as now. I'd argue not as bad as now.
It's been some violence that
it's bad.
It's been some violent stuff that's been happening.
They killed Superman. They broke Batman's back. Back in the '90s, and
nowhere near as bad as the rape of Sue Dibney, though. Nowhere near as bad, in my opinion.
It's not. It's very different. In the '80s, when they did that stuff, in the '80s when they did that stuff, it was mostly out of continuity. Like Dark Knight was Elseworlds. A lot of those violent books that were happening were not the mainstream books, and now it is in the mainstream. And furthermore, because it's all mainstream titles, what they're doing can't be undone. You kill off Arsenal's daughter, you can't just bring her back. I mean, I guess you could argue that you could, and she'll probably come back as some like half cyborg villain sometime when a writer runs out of ideas.
I'm hoping
from the future she'll come back and she's grown up,
or she'll come back. She'll come back all grown with a soul sword and somehow escaped death.
Yeah, the same way as Wally's son, who lost his powers, he's going to definitely turn into a villain now and have a feud with his sister who stole his powers away. I mean, you can see the bad stories coming a mile and a half away. It's because of the big things they're doing, you can't just take it back. They're doing more lasting damage, you could argue, or not. I mean, some people like these stories, some people don't. From my perspective, it looks like lasting damage that these characters are going to have to live with and all future writers are going to have to deal with. And either you're going to have some crappy story that tries to undo it with a whitewash effect, which happens all the time, or you're going to have to stick with it. You know, Arsenal with cybernetic limbs now is going to be the new standard, or maybe Zatanna will finally use her magic for something and heal somebody instead of taking their mind away.
Remember, this is not drama. Because it's perpetual, it is melodrama.
Yeah, it's fake drama. It's let's push things to the furthest extreme we possibly can, because simple human emotion isn't enough anymore. We got to really gut somebody.
And so the thing is you get the situation where, you know, your readers, and because we do so many conventions here, we talk to tons and tons of readers, you know, every day while we're at them. And the readers really at this point are just crying bullshit. They're really sick of it. And I can see that through the attendance of the shows, and just the anger and the venom that I hear all the time. Like, I come back from a Comic-Con, and yes, it's fun, but it sort of brings me down because there's so many fans that are just
exhausted. They're exhausted.
Right.
You know, it's almost, it isn't right to look at this Flash situation on its own, or to look at Hal Jordan on his own, or Steve Rogers on his own, or any of these characters on their own, because what's really happening right now is you've got them all at once. One after the other, after the other, after the other. I mean, Marvel has been stringing huge company crossover events together, one after the other, for the last, like, 5 years.
It's never
stopped.
A different story. It's one story called Big Fucking Crossover.
And it's got a lot of issues.
Right.
And it never stopped. And it's just been going. It's been going for so long that people are tired.
And the numbers made them suffer for it. Like, if you look at the Siege, it depends on what you did. Like, if you look at the numbers for Siege, it's a lot lower than the numbers were for the previous crossovers. Like, the market.
Yeah.
The market has to decide, and it's up to us to do that. So we didn't buy Siege, so you know what? They're not going to say it's because we didn't buy it. They're going to say we're cutting back on that stuff for other reasons. Mm-hmm. They're never going to admit that it's because of what we buy or don't buy.
Yeah.
But people like Blackest Night.
Yes,
you do it by the sales, because it maintained enough of the same amount of sales for each book. People did not like the Siege as well as they did other stuff. So if DC does another crossover and it does not work and people don't like it, they will not buy it. The sales will go down and they will get the message, but it's up to us to send the message.
Well, Brent, where are you at right now? I mean, I know that you're sort of middle of the road on your purchasing and stuff like that. But I mean, are you frustrated? Like, I mean, are you in the masses right now, or are you okay with what DC and Marvel are putting out this very moment?
I don't know. I'm kind of middle of the road. The Batman stuff's got me excited.
Yeah.
Because Return of Bruce Wayne is coming out, and the first two issues of that have come out, and those are really damn good.
Yeah.
And I'm digging what he's doing in Batman and Robin. I actually like the Flash series. As much as we, you know, thought Rebirth was kind of middle of the road, the first issue was a tour de force, man.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Francis Manapul was fucking out of the park.
Second issue was good. Yeah. Second issue's not nearly as good as the first, but it's still pretty good.
Right, but it was still a standout, better from any other Flash stuff I've read recently.
Sure, yeah.
You know, Brightest Days got me going pretty good. It's just starting to kick things off, so that's got me going pretty good. You know, Green Lantern is particularly excellent. As far as Marvel goes, Siege, I mean, returning everything to the status quo is kind of like, for me, is kind of losing interest, because I came in at Marvel when they started New Avengers and all this upheaval and stuff like that. So all that stuff is what I was, you know, almost brought up on with Marvel. You know what I mean? I mean, that's my Marvel. This Brian Bendis fuck everything era has been my Marvel. New Avengers has been my book. Mm-hmm. I love that book. And I know it's not going to be the same, but I'm interested to see what it is. But as far as like Avengers number one, I mean, it really didn't grab me. Just storytelling wise, Secret Avengers I dug.
Secret Avengers was great. Yeah, I mean, we'll get more into Secret Avengers, you know,
yeah,
more in depth for the review
yeah
corner.
I don't want to go into depth that, yeah, but I'm kind of holding out to see what the other two Avengers Academy looks solid, because I was so digging Avengers Initiative. I might have been the only person that was, but
I liked it.
I read that book front to back
yeah
the entire way through, and I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
The
I'm done
3D,
now, though.
Dude, the fucking 3D man stuff with the Secret Invasion, that was kick ass.
Well, you know what's great actually right now, and surprised the hell out of me. The first issue of the new Thunderbolts that Parker's putting together,
uh-huh,
was really damn good.
I didn't buy it.
It's new. It's like old school Thunderbolts mixed in with like Suicide Squad. That's the best way to describe it. You got some heroes, you got some villains, you've got some reformed heroes, and they're all in there. Most of them are trying to knock time off of their prison sentence.
Mm-hmm.
But you've got Mach 5, Songbird, and Mockingbird, and Fixer from the original Thunderbolts.
Mm-hmm.
Along with Juggernaut, Crossbones, and Ghost.
And Man-Thing?
And Man-Thing is their teleporter.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's so far has got me, like, enthralled. Like, this is the most I've been interested in Thunderbolts since the beginning of Warren Ellis's run. So I'm happy.
Well, who wouldn't want to get their hands on Man-Thing?
Here's the thing.
You knew that was coming.
The thing we were also talking about earlier today, too, was that comics right now, if you compare them to any other era, may be written better than at any other time. And they may look better than at any other time. But because of your fan base and the exhaustion, that's what's really killing it.
Yeah.
You know, you could do incredible, incredible stories, but unless you got that excitement going, which is really waning, I don't know if you can save it right now.
Depends on the artist, too, because some artists are going straight from their pencils to coloring, and they really shouldn't. I mean, we know this from example. I mean, Joe Madureira's Ultimates Volume 3 was impossible to read.
That never happened.
Yeah.
But you've got guys like
book.
Ron Garney on Weapon X that are...
looks beautiful.
That are dudes doing it from pencils, and it looks awesome.
Oh yeah,
I think it's just a matter of who's doing the coloring.
Oh yeah, no, dude, it's totally on who's doing the coloring, and it's totally on what type of art you yourself put out before the coloring. Because even the best
yes
coloring in the world can't save art that needs inking that isn't inked.
No, you probably
yes
saw the. I saw pencils, and we talked about this on the show before, from Joe Mad's Ultimates 3.
Yeah.
Fucking sick.
Mm-hmm.
And the coloring just, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it needed to be crisper, and, you know, it was a great idea. It probably works very nice when, you know, that colorist is maybe doing covers or something like that, which I won't be surprised if that's where he started, but... You know, there's a difference between interior pages and the colors, and he just didn't know it quite yet. And that's
well, it was
it
also
suffered
very dark, and
right
when you've got Joe Madd is a very dark sort of artist. He tends to use a lot of heavy blacks and a lot of hatching and stuff, and when you're working with a dark artist, you can't let your color be as dark or as muddy as that colorist wanted to go,
right,
because everything starts to sort of slip up.
Man, I would be okay.
Overall...
I would honestly be okay if everyone in the Marvel Universe was colored by Paul Mouse, because... Like, I mean, it's not just because I interviewed him either. It's because the Fantastic Four stuff that he's been putting to get out for the past God knows how many years, and then the stuff that he's been doing with Dale Eaglesham, that's a guy who knows how to color from absolutely anything and make it look, like, perfect.
Yeah. I would agree with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But sadly, I don't know how to clone people yet.
Someday, maybe he'll train others, and that's really the hope, is that guy does good stuff.
Pass it on.
He'll pass it on.
Yep.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
We're slicing, we're working on it.
All I really want with comics right now is to see more young readers to replace the old readers.
I'll take it a step further. I would like to see more young creators
yes
to replace the old creators.
Mm.
DC is talking about, we saw a press release about a month back probably, DC was quietly talking about something that sounded very much like their own Ultimate line,
But when they announced the creators that were on it, it was going to be, you know, Geoff Johns and a bunch of the other old guard, big deal DC writers.
Yeah, that's the Earth One graphic novels that they're coming out with.
Yeah.
Yeah, mistake. Total mistake. If you look back at what made Ultimate Marvel so successful, is that when they launched it primarily with writers nobody knew, who had never really done any superhero stuff before, who had never really done any mainstream stuff before.
Who were hungry for what they were going
to do. Who were hungry to dig into this stuff and were given carte blanche to do basically whatever they thought would be a good story. And what you got were some fantastic, interesting, exciting, different sorts of stories. Very different takes on these characters, and yet at the same time,
very current takes too.
And very current, very different, very important, but still very true to those characters at the same time. But it only happened because you had new, fresh creators who were not going to tell the same old stuff again. And if I feel like if I look at any Geoff Johns book now, it's going to look the same as basically any other Geoff Johns book on the market. What could Geoff Johns do with an Ultimate Hal Jordan that's not exactly the same as what he's doing with regular Hal Jordan?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's the same stuff. That's the way I felt about the All-Star line, even. When they gave Frank Miller All-Star Batman and Robin with Jim Lee...
Yeah,
it was. I mean, they even eventually stated that this is technically a part of the Dark Knight Returns universe. They didn't say that at first.
Yeah, you could tell that though, just reading it to begin with.
I did. Yeah,
there's a lot of people's speculation that, you know, this feels similar in tone with that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't really All-Star per se that anybody could pick it up, read it, and enjoy it as All-Star Superman.
Right.
You know, was.
Yeah. Yeah, no. All-Star Superman, that was the right idea. That was a completely, you know, separate continuity with just an all-time, forever good story, which made me wonder, and I don't know if you felt the same thing, Brent, like, what the hell was the All-Star line supposed to be if one of them was, you know, a forever timeless story and the other one seemed to be going off of something previous?
Get me, man.
anybody else have any ideas? Chris?
Well, they went with...
I think it was just... to give it to some creators who could sell to tell whatever stories they wanted to tell.
Okay.
Because they knew it would sell.
And then once the editor behind it left, they realized how such a bad idea that is.
Yeah.
I think the All-Star line is really DC's Heroes Reborn.
Right.
Because Heroes Reborn for Marvel was their first swing at an Ultimate Universe, and they completely botched it. And then fold it back in with the regular line. Now, that was obviously sort of part of their plan from the beginning with Heroes Reborn, whereas All-Star doesn't appear to have had any sort of plan whatsoever. But at the same time, what Marvel learned from Heroes Reborn, they then took into the Ultimate line. They did it the second time. All-Star feels like that to me. It feels like DC's first swing at something sort of Ultimate-ish that is not quite exactly that yet, but they're figuring things out for when they try it for real.
All right. I mean, they brought Jeff Lemire in to do some backups with Superboy, and that's something I would not have thought they would do, DC would do.
Not backups. That's an ongoing series.
Oh, it's an ongoing series? Well, still, they brought Jeff Lemire.
So what is the point of Adventure Comics now? Launched a Superboy series.
It's a Legion.
Taken over as a Legion series. We've got a Legion of Superheroes series. What do we need Adventure Comics for? Put a Superboy backup in it, where he was the main feature, and then, you know what? We're going to launch our own Superboy title. What the fuck is the point of this series? Seriously, we have a Legion of Superheroes written by Paul Levitz, current, you know, catch-up. Why do we need more... This is what I don't understand. You bring back Legion of Superheroes, fine. I liked where they were going with it. And this is another Review Corner book, but this would be a different conversation because we're going to talk about the actual insert. But the concept behind it is nostalgic because you bring back Paul Levitz, similar to bringing back Mark Waid on The Flash with Wally West a few years ago. Fine. Whatever. He's moving forward with what Geoff Johns was building on. Fine. It was cool. All right? But why do you have to do – I understand why you can do that separate from Adventure Comics – but why do you stick Adventure Comics in this soulless limbo of it's a Superboy book, it's a Legion book, it's a Legion book with Superboy backup, oh, we're going to put an Atom stuff in here. What is the point of this book? Is it spotlighting Legion? Is it spotlighting lesser-known characters? Is it spotlighting Superboy? Why are we shuffling around? It's like, just do away with the book. I don't think Legion can support two books.
I don't think they can either, and I think Adventure Comics is going to be the one to go because, A, yeah, even if Adventure Comics was around for years, it hasn't been around for a while, and Legion of Superheroes is an actual Legion of Superheroes title. You know,
They made such a big freaking deal that, oh, we're bringing back Adventure Comics. Here's 501. Oh-ho, here's 502. Oh-ho, it is, but it isn't. It's old, but it's new. Here's reverse numbering. Is it number one or number 507? I don't know. Oh, you know, it's just so bullshit. It's just, like, you know, it's new, but at the same time, it's old again. And it's just that pandering to these old farts who are stuck in their ways, who, I'm sorry, you know, we know a few of them in the podcasting community that just... You know, I've stopped listening to their podcast since anything because I just can't take it anymore.
And the problem is, we will get that way one day.
I'm sure,
dude. I'm almost out of the young category. I'm 26. In 4 years, I'll be the old fart. So that's what I gotta look forward to. You know, once I'm not in my 20s anymore.
Brent, I hope you come into New York Comic Con, man.
not this year, but next year he might be here. But what were we going to say, Chris?
Well, see, the problem is that it's those old farts that are keeping the comics industry alive.
Oh, really?
Why are you kicking us in the dirt, youngin?
Yeah.
Is it really holding on to that audience, saying that they're keeping you alive when they're also what's killing you?
Well, see,
I mean, the reason that comics are in the situation they're in right now is because when things got hard. And when things got tough, when they had their economic troubles before, every time their solution was, well, let's hold on really tight to the fans we have. Yeah. And as that audience got smaller and smaller and smaller, they clung more and more desperately to the existing fan base who are making demands that you cannot meet and who will never really be happy with anything you're doing because they really just want to go back to when they were 13 again. But they can't because they're 35, they're 40, they're whatever. And they can't get that pure experience again. So you're trying to feed two audiences. You're trying to please the old guys who won't be pleased. You're trying to simultaneously get new people interested. And by going for the old audience, you guarantee you won't hook the young. By trying to hook the young, you guarantee you'll make the old unhappy. You're pulling yourself in half.
Yeah, well, see, that I don't think it needs to be an either-or situation. Right. And, see, my big thing in... You know, I apologize to DC for calling you guys a bunch of jackasses earlier because I do like your books, but my big thing is with the tone, because I think that the mentality is that with all the violence and the sex, that they think that they're, you know, being mature in their storytelling to appeal to these older readers, but it's doing the exact opposite. And it's just coming off as very juvenile.
What sex books are you reading from DC? Because I can't think of one.
Okay, well, in Rise of Arsenal number 3, we had Roy thinking about ranking the women he's had sex with while fighting against Cheshire, and then trying to get pity sex from her before we found out that he was having some trouble down there.
And this is after he had called Donna Troy like a whore. For sleeping with all the people that she slept with over the years.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
the story was, his daughter was murdered. She died.
He's going through a lot of shit right now. I wouldn't blame him for trying to get laid.
Now, in one sense, we complain about how the writing is and how you don't want to talk down to your readers. And J.T. Krull is not a guy that's been in the mainstream for a long time. This is his story. Now, he's trying to let you... I read it, and I've been in DC for a long time, in Marvel. I'm the old head that people talk about is tearing up comics.
You're cool, Daryl. You're cool.
He put in... I mean, I understand where he was going at. He wants you to know that all these things are happening with him. Roy is not in a good place. He's in a terrible place. And he's lashing out at everybody. He blames himself for being a superhero because he thinks that's what killed my daughter. He blames the superhero community for not saving my daughter. Then on top of that, he's always had those issues where he made a baby with an assassin. I mean, that wasn't a news. That was something that was done quite a long time ago. I mean, even in that, is kind of bugged out that he was having a sexual relationship with a killer, with a straight for hire assassin. So he always had issues. I mean, and on top of that, he's a drug addict. I mean, that's something you don't ever get rid of. You still have those tendencies. Yeah. That you always have to deal with that. So I think he was trying to put that. He was trying to put all that into the story and not sugarcoat it what he was going through. Now, I think it happened so fast, the way it was written, it might have been too quick. And people, it jarred a lot of people because they weren't used to something like that.
I think the main issue is that they shot themselves in the foot a long time ago as far as readership. You know what I mean? Whatever the circumstances were, I don't know because I wasn't around. I'm not in the industry, but, you know, in the 90s, I guess, I'm just speculating here, so don't quote me if my history is wrong here. But, you know, we had comics in supermarkets. We had comics still on spinner racks from time to time. What happened, basically what they shot themselves in the foot with, is that they took comics out of the accessible areas to everyday people and put it into a tiny little dark shop run by people who don't care about customer service and just care about comics, you know, per se. These comic book stores that don't have great – they're just not great or whatever. And, you know, they took comics out of the hands of the young readership. You know, when you're walking around and the kid's walking through the magazine aisle, oh, mom, I'm going to wait here. Come get me when you're done. Pick up a comic book, read it. Stop by a spinner rack, read it. Took it out of the 7-Elevens. I mean, there's some now, but it's not the current stuff that will keep you coming back there every now and, you know, every single time. You know, Walden Books was for the longest time the only place that had a spinner rack of, you know, it wasn't the newest stuff, but it was at least a month or two behind.
Yeah.
And those are all gone now. I think Borders may still have a rack or two of things.
Some of them do.
Some of them do. Barnes & Noble seems to have them, but they keep them behind the counter. What good is fresh new comic books behind the counter, Barnes & Noble? I'm not ever going to buy those because I can't flip through them. I can't look at them. And I feel stupid walking up to the counter and go, can I see that issue of Batman? You know what I mean? It's just retarded.
But not only that.
I think that's the main issue. So they shot themselves in the foot with losing this influx of young readers. Whatever happened in the 90s, basically. Everybody who's 30 right now, you could probably trace their reading back to the 80s and 90s starting to read. That stopped. At some point, a huge mass of that stopped because they just were not available everywhere anymore, right? So once they realize that, now they have to pander to these people, you know, these older readers who have been buying them for years because there is no more influx of new readers. And they're trying things like, you know, oh, the Iron Man 2 movie, rather than, let me see, give them the current copy of the comic, we'll put out some cheaply written, cheaply drawn movie tie-in that has nothing to do with anything and go, oh, here's a comic book, comics are cool. When it was total shit, and they could have just given him Matt Fraction's number one. You know what I mean? That's what angered me most about going to see Iron Man 2, other than the fact that I was holding the door open for my girlfriend and some cop yells at me and tells me to shut the door because they're trying to keep this huge movie theater cool. Fucking retards. 70 degrees outside in Florida, but separate issue. Is that they give you, you know, I was like, oh, cool, and open it up, and there's nothing relatable in this comic book to what's going on with Iron Man right now. You know what I mean? You want to get them to a comic store. You want to do these things. Do like, you know, a comic shop that's on Bleeding Cool all the time. They're in Orlando. They are almost on the other side of town, but they're at my movie theater on the east side of Orlando giving away free copies of Jonah Hex, New Avengers, Iron Man, Civil War, all these retailer incentives, these $1 issues or whatever that's coming out from Marvel. Just giving away willy-nilly to anybody who wants one. I mean, I'd like to see more retailers doing that, but I'd like to see the companies do that rather than the movie studio get this cheaply written and drawn something. Just print up a whole bunch of things that are already produced, and you don't have to pay people a second time. It's just retarded. So they lost their readership, and they're trying to get it in a way that they can't figure out how to do it, I think is the big issue. And if they were to get an influx of new readers and figure this out magically – digital people, I'm telling you, you know, it, then we would not have this problem of everything is old as new, is old as new, is old as new again. Mm-hmm. Because we wouldn't be pandering to the same audience.
Yeah.
I do see that with digital is changing everything. And the kids that we talk to, anime shows who, remember, do read comics. Our biggest seller is a Gambit print.
I got a Green Lantern Corps piece that goes gangbusters at anime shows, right. And they can name all the characters.
Yeah. They're reading them, but they are reading them online, not with
not
paper.
For the direct
and not,
market.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Yeah.
They don't want to pay $4 an issue.
Yeah. Well, the only time these people would ever go into a shop is at that event that happened a few weeks ago. It's called Free Comic Book Day. Where they can go in, they can get a couple of free comics. Everything's, you know, 30% off at most stores, or at least 20% off, where you can go in, get a deal, and go. Like my favorite thing is at Cosmic Comics in Manhattan. You can go there, and everything in the store, literally everything in the store, including new issues, back issues, and trade paperbacks on a free comic book day, is 50% off everything. And that's the best time for people to go into a shop and buy stuff, because it's reasonably priced. It's probably the amount that it would be on digital. You know, I mean, a $2.99 comic all of a sudden becomes $1.50. You know, that's called a deal right there. That's reasonable for most human beings, and they'll go ahead and they'll buy it. But that's not what everybody does. And these stores can't have a free comic book day every single week. That's not the way to get anybody to go into the store, because if you're giving away free comics every single week, how the hell are you going to make any goddamn money?
But I think what Brent said really killed a lot of people that go to comics, a lot of readers stopped buying comics when they went out of the store, when they went out of the newsstands, and then at the same time, you had all these terrible store owners who were doing things like being mean to customers, not even reading the books that they were selling. I mean, if they had the amount of stores now that they have, so many good stores now that do so many good things, if they had more of those stores back in the 90s all the way through, I think they could have kept a lot of readers. But when I think Marvel and DC got lazy with the way that they were trying to come up with stuff, they didn't care. They just started spitting out product. And at the same time, you had stores that were, you know, when it had the people buying all the covers and all that kind of stuff, it was easy money for a lot of bad stores. And then when it got to the point where everything fell under, all that stuff happened at the same time, and people left stores and didn't come back.
Well, yeah, that's the big thing, is that comics became collectibles instead of, you know, something that you'd read. And when all those people that had come to comics just to, for the collectible aspect, just to hoard away all these issues because they thought they'd be able to send their kids to college off of selling them or something, once the bomb dropped out of that, they left because they didn't come to it because they love these characters. They didn't come to comics because they enjoyed the stories and wanted to read more. They came to it just to bag and board them and store them away. And once the market collapsed, they, you know, just left and never came back.
Yeah, well, I immediately think of the movie, Comic Book Movie, where there's that scene where a kid grabs a toy and the mom's all like, "Oh, hey, look, you want that toy? It's good. Why don't you play it out and you know, take it out of the packaging and play with it?" He's like, "No." And he's like, "Well, why not? It's a collectible." You know, that's the mentality that a lot of comic book fans are probably giving their kids because of all the long boxes in their house. I mean, yeah, I'm a subject to that myself because I hold on to every goddamn thing that I have like a pack rat. And you know, as opposed to cycling things out. But that's the mentality. You read it and you put it away. You read it and you put it away. It's not there on your shelf, and you're probably not going to look at it until 5 years later when you're cycling out your boards and say, "Oh yeah, I remember that issue. That was good." And you go out and you read it again.
I just want to say, okay, anime kids, you can come in my comic book shop only if you dress like a normal person. Just saying. Because I won't give you weird looks if you dress like a normal person.
How much of a percentage of your audience do you think you just lost, Ian?
About one.
Okay, not too bad then.
I mean, seriously, what's an anime kid doing listening to my goddamn show?
Anyway? Anime makes me feel like I'm sitting in a wheelchair.
No, they don't. Right anime.
I've never understood anime. Yeah.
Anime makes me feel so old.
And rock your Yuri Yaoi paddle, Ian. Rock your Yuri Yaoi paddle.
Yuri Yaoi.
I'm going to go to New York Comic Con and put on my shawl and go into the anime section and go, what are these books you people are reading? I don't understand.
You know what? But those kids—they're so excited in comparison. I wish we could just get a little bit of that magic that they've got.
Make them read comics and dress better. That's it.
Listen to us. But these kids are thrilled, and I don't mean just kids. You know, most of these kids are—I say kids—but they're, you know, in their mid. And then their latter 20s and their teens. You know, we're not talking about 6-year-olds here. We're talking about everybody else that should have been reading comics and then stopped because comics forgot about them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'm an anime and manga fan, and I started reading comic books in junior high, and I got into manga and anime in high school, and that was around the time that I was buying less comics. It was because I needed something that I could relate to a little bit more, that felt a little bit more mature, that felt a little bit more, intuitive and creative than what I was getting. Because at the time, Superman comics were terrible when I was reading them in high school. I mean, they were awful.
You talking about the mullet?
This is post mullet.
The super mullet.
Yeah, this is post mullet. Is this
red? The Superman?
This
electric blue. Superman?
This was a little bit after electric blue. This was a little bit after electric blue. To put it in perspective, I mean, I graduated high school in 2002. Okay,
God.
So in 2002, at that point, red and blue were long gone, but we were getting these repetitive Superman stories that just seemed to be telling the same damn thing over and over and over again. And they had, like, multiple reboots and failed reboots. And Joe Casey was writing it one week. And Chuck Austin was writing it the next week. And it just, everything was disjointed. Nothing made any goddamn sense. Well, yes, that was the problem because it was fucking Chuck Austin. But
wasn't that bad. It had even Rice drawing it. That wasn't that bad.
No. The art was great. The title sucked, though. It just got to a point where I didn't want to read that many comic books anymore. And I didn't discover Batman until Hush. I'll sadly admit that. I wasn't that much of a Batman fan until after that. So I missed the Rucka years. I missed a lot of the good stuff that was coming out at that point.
Neil Adams, that was what got me.
Neil Adams, I can understand that because Neil Adams is the man. But that's your time. You know, that's not mine. I wish I had a Neil Adams growing up. You know, I wish I had somebody to draw me in.
I had kind of a similar experience to you, Ian, because I stopped reading American comics in elementary school, and in junior high, I was growing up in middle school during the time where anime and manga just exploded in America. Mm-hmm. And so I was watching, you know, Toonami and Cartoon Network, and I was getting manga out from, you know, the library, and that was my comics until around the time of when the superhero movies started coming out and, you know, Spider-Man 2 hit. And I started checking out, you know, Ultimate Spider-Man, started checking out the old stuff. And so that was how I got back into, you know, American comics. Mm-hmm. And I think that as far as getting a new audience, I think it's something that the industry desperately needs. And I have a couple ideas on how it could happen. But it's going to take some effort. And it might not be entirely successful. These are just things that I thought of.
Well, hold on. Before you say that, though, here's one thing. You know you've gone too far when ... and you've got three words to keep in mind: half demon Punisher. Okay.
And I own all those issues, by the way.
Yeah. Well, what'd you say, Brent?
Frankencastle.
Yeah, Frankencastle.
Cancel.
Yeah, Frankencastle.
Stupid.
Yeah, that's stupid. Eh, I'm not reading it myself. I can't vouch for that. But Half Demon Punisher was when I looked at comic books and said, "Are you fucking kidding me?"
Well, he was an angel, really.
Oh, because that makes it better, Daryl. Because that makes it better. I'm sorry. That makes it better. I fully apologize and retract my statement. He was half angel, so of course that makes it all better.
And he had a spirit gun.
Well, at least after that, the Garth Ennis Punisher. And that
was a while
delightful.
After. Garth Ennis Punisher.
No, really, was it?
Garth Ennis Punisher was damn good. Yeah,
they had ended Punisher for like 2 years, and then he came on after. 2 or 3 years.
The Marvel Knights revitalization. That's what that was. You know, that was getting Daredevil back to square one. That was getting Punisher back to square one. I mean, Daredevil in that god awful armor costume he was in for a while. You know,
thou shalt not speak bad of Scott McDaniel.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
I love that art. You're looking at
Scott McDaniel.
You're messing me up.
Chris, what were you going to say before I cut you off?
Oh well, just for starters, I think that you need to make the mainstream lines themselves more accessible to younger readers.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, right now, comics for kids are defined in the comics industry right now is 4 or 5 titles in their own line, and they're just for, like, 6-year-olds. There's no crossover whatsoever. And I think that you can have comics that would be appropriate enough for younger readers, but also that adults can enjoy with no problem. Mm-hmm. I don't believe it in either or, and I think that the mainstream lines need to drift more into an area where both sets of readership it would appeal to that and it would be valid for that. Because I got to tell you, if I had a kid, I don't think I would give their. I can't think of many mainstream comics that I would think would be appropriate for him.
Okay, Chris, I got 2 comic books for you that I'm going to throw out there. One of them you're going to slap me for, and the other one you might agree with me for, okay? Because one of them that I will say is post-Brand New Day Amazing Spider-Man. Okay?
Yeah.
And that's my opinion, okay? I know you have a very different one, and you're allowed to have it, but for me...
No, I know.
Omit.
Teenagers and more, you know, younger people, when I go into Midtown Comics, are picking up Amazing than they are any other book on the racks.
That's great.
That's great. I'm very happy about that, you know. And the other one, and, you know, we'll see about this, is I would give them Avengers number one.
No.
Mm-hmm. I would give them Avengers number one. And here's my reasoning. Because A, it's a perfect jumping on point. B, it's the star of the line, no matter what people say about it or not say about it, Daryl. Right now, it's the star of the Marvel line, okay? Because the Avengers are the key title in the Marvel Universe. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. And this is their entryway into Marvel. You start with Avengers, and you go from there. You can read Iron Man if you want. You can pick up the most recent Matt Fraction jumping on point for the Iron Man 2 movie that came out. That's a great place to start for Iron Man, because that's the beginning of his, you know, current look in the comics and everything. That's great. You know, you can pick up some of Brubaker's Cap and feel at home. Pick up Brubaker's Secret Avengers, which was hella good, but again, we'll get more into that some other time. But just definitely I would give them Avengers number one. You can tell me why I'm wrong right now, Daryl, if you want.
It seems like it's just... It seemed like rehashing to me, like the same.
Yeah. No. You say it's rehashing, but I'm talking about kids that haven't read this stuff before. I'm not talking about people like me or like you that have read comics like this before.
Well, I work in a library, and we have to order books on a constant basis. That I do all the branches, like 100-something branches. So we do. I have to deal with all the manga and the Marvel and the DC books, and when kids read, they do love the Ultimate Spider-Man books. That's something that they always pick up.
Good.
And it's funny, they always Morrison's Batman run,
mm-hmm.
We cannot keep it in stock.
Wow.
That entire Batman from when he first came on the book all the way to now, kids are snatching it up left and right.
That made my day.
And but the dialogue in some of the complaints I've seen kids give for some of the Avengers books by Bendis is that they lose interest in the story. That's a problem that a lot of kids are doing. They're not they like it because they see Spider-Man, they see Wolverine, they see Thor, Iron Man. But then when they get into the story, when they start to read it, they've had issues with keeping interest in those stories.
Okay,
that's the issue that I've had. Like you, like if they had some type of history, like me, I'll stay with it because I have such a long history into it. But kids usually, sometimes you have to really grab them as soon as they start, you know, getting into a story. You have to grab them and keep them. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that has not been happening the longer Bendis has been on. Like each arc after each trade sells less, they reserve it less and less as the trades go in.
All right, that's a good sign. I mean, that's a good sign that at least the previous stuff wasn't grabbing them. I'll be curious to see what happens with this new Avengers, but not new Avengers, just Avengers, but not new Avengers.
Right.
Because that's new Avengers, not Avengers. So, you know, that's I oh god, my head hurts.
Oh. Yeah. And I mean when I say that, I think that there should be more of a middle ground. I'm not saying that all, you know, comics across the board should purely be aimed at getting younger readers back. Like, sure. I think that there certainly should be titles that are like the Max line. There should be titles like the Max line that are, you know, purely aimed at mature audiences. But I think if we get out of this either-or mentality and find a middle ground, because I would like for a majority of comics to be like in the 70s and 80s, not, which kind of ties into this whole everything old is new again, not so much in bringing all these old concepts back, but bringing it back so that any could you know, pick up pretty much any comic they wanted off of the stand. Mm-hmm. And they would be able to get into it. And, like, we don't need all the exposition of that era. Like, just, like, recap, using recap pages and, like, everything. It's just a way to make it so that any comic, any superhero comic that would catch a kid's eye, you know, would just instantly be able to grab him, and it would be, you know, appropriate for that age group, and the older readers would also, you know, it wouldn't be so aimed at younger readers that the older readers would get frustrated by it, and just, it's, you know, it's an impossible dream, you know, but that's, I think that's what...
You're talking about Pixarization of comics, though. That's what you're talking about. That's fine, I think. Of superhero comics.
Well, Pixar has a total mastery of writing stories that can appeal broadly to basically every audience equally. And I think you're also talking in a way, or at least something I would like to see that dovetails with what you're talking about, is aiming more for a limited series mentality than an ongoing series mentality, or at least an ongoing series of miniseries. You know, write for a story, tell your story, release your graphic novel or whatever, and then move to the next story, but not necessarily these never-ending tirades of ongoings that can never have any closure whatsoever.
Yeah, and you know what? That's why I think kids would be drawn to a Grant Morrison Batman, because that's exactly what Grant Morrison's Batman was. That was a story that was over when it was over, and it moved on to the next story, and the next story after that, and the next story after that. You know, they are volumes that you can read, and then just be done with them, and if you want more, by all means, they're right there. You know, with Wolverine, you can't get that because it's usually one writer, and then you move on to the next one, you move on to the next one. Yeah, you can read Miller and Romita Jr.'s Enemy of the State and be really happy with it, but then where do you go after that? You know, what do you do after that? Do you just pick up a random Wolverine trade and hope you like it nearly as much, or do you go for the next arc, which has absolutely nothing to do with that whatsoever, and with completely different creators, and hope that you enjoy it nearly as much? No, that's not the way to go. Keep your creators consistent, but have the stories be finite. Mm-hmm. You know, don't let them be infinite.
And I think that the crossover, the popularity of the crossovers kind of plays into that, because, I mean, crossover, you know, the main titles and having them tie in has been very profitable for the comics companies, and I think it's probably helped them, you know, to stay afloat, to have those huge crossovers and to cross over in all those books.
Right.
But I think what we need more of is we need more, like, Morrison's Batman run, like, JMS's Thor run. Somebody with a finite plan that they come and they tell a complete story that you don't have to read all the other, that don't get swept into crossovers. You don't have to read this or that. They can just read this complete story, this vision that this writer has, and then you give another writer his chance to tell his story.
You know, we're talking so much about, you know, Marvel and DC, and that's great, you know, and they've got movies and stuff, but too, when we would recommend comics to our students, because we did a lot of teaching for many years, there are books like Invincible that we would recommend above a Marvel or DC book, because Invincible is a great superhero story that's self-contained, and it's just fantastic, and, you know, you can give it to a kid, and it's really, it's fine. Sure, does it get bloody sometimes? Yes. But
at the same time, kids shouldn't be taught that violence doesn't have consequences.
Exactly.
Every branch that we, when we have to order stuff, there is a constant flood, because there's a constant request for all of the, not only the individual Invincible trades, but then when they do the big volume trades, that comes out. I mean, comes out the next, when it comes out in the stores, we get it the next week. That's how fast and how much in demand Invincible is.
Yeah, they've really got something going there that speaks to this next generation while still being open to really anybody who wants to read it. And, you know, if Marvel and DC do that or not, you know, I would hope so. But if they don't, I look at a thing like Invincible and I look at how many kids are reading it and I look at how many kids, you know, we've got Invincible print in the book. They come over and they say, ooh, Invincible. I don't get that as much at a comic show, but I do get it in an anime show where the audience is younger. So even if comics, you know, end up imploding on themselves, comics is in Marvel and DC, I can feel comfortable knowing that those other people are there to pick up the pieces. I just wish they would even, you know, work harder to grab that next generation, because they're out there. They would like to read something besides manga, but... No, it's the rare Invincible that we give them rather than catering towards them more like I wish we would. I wish we should.
Yeah. Brent, what do you recommend to the everyday human being looking for comic books? I mean, would you go Marvel DC or would you go something more Invincible-esque?
I would say Invincible is a really good start. Just, you know, again, it's like, you know, you can't win this battle. Invincible's like, what, 75 issues in? Mm-hmm. That's a long story. I mean, it's a great story. That's a long way to go.
Well, I mean...
I would just go with the Ultimate Invincible trades.
I didn't mean to interrupt you, Brent, but, I mean, One Piece is up to 45? Volume 45?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so I don't think, like, if we're trying to appeal to, like, the manga... subset of readers. I mean, I don't think they'd have a problem with something that's only 10 volumes so far. I mean, because I think
right,
that there
manga
are...
manga is more accessible in that it's like $5 or $6 a volume, whereas a trade for five, six issues is $15.
Mm-hmm. It's just the internet. There you go. It's where they're reading it. It's a great equalizer.
Do you bring them to the internet then? I mean, or do you hand them the cheapest trade you can throw at them?
I don't know, honestly. I wouldn't know where to start them.
Yeah.
There's no one great equalizer of comics that you could give to any one person. Mm-hmm. There is no great equalizer.
Yeah, because we've talked about this on the show in multiple episodes where it all depends on the person,
mm-hmm.
and it all depends on what they like, you know, because if they like fantasy, give them Fable, see how it goes. You know, mm-hmm. if they like more political intrigue, but they're also into superheroes a little bit, give them Ex Machina, see how it goes. You know, you could give them anything at all. If they are a fan of superheroes, if they've seen the Spider-Man movies and they like them, then either give them JMS's Spider-Man or give them the current Brand New Day stuff and see if they like it. You know, and if they like more, and they're asking you, "What else should I do? What else should I do?" Go for it. I have a friend who's older than I am that we're trying to get into comic books at least a little bit, and she started off with Fables, has been enjoying that, is reading Runaways as it comes out, read the Brian K. Vaughan stuff, really enjoyed that. I think she's got one of the Whedons now and is looking for more. And the most recent thing that she read was Batman Hush. And she really enjoyed it. Like, more than I actually thought she was going to, but she really enjoyed it. And she now asked me, should I start reading Birds of Prey? Because I really like the character of Barbara Gordon, of Oracle. And I've got the first three Birds of Prey trades that I picked up at a con that are hard to get sitting on my shelf right here that she can happily take. And if she wants to read the Gail Simone stuff after that, by all means, bam. You know, that's a road in. That's somebody that obviously found something that they like, who, mind you, was exclusively manga and anime before this. And found something that she could get her hands on that she enjoyed, and now she's reading both. I call that a win. But she's older, not younger.
Well, I think what comics need is they need more better advertising. Because I think with manga and anime, it's kind of hardwired into the brains of people who grew up, like our generation, Ian, that were part of like the big explosion of anime and manga. They know that anime and manga, usually if there's an anime, there's more often than not a manga associated with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the comic companies need to advertise that, yeah, there's these great cartoons out there, there's these awesome movies that are coming out, there's also comics, and you might like them. Mm-hmm. There needs to be better advertising that they're, like, on BBC America, I know they've started running the ads for Fables.
Oh, God,
and I think
no, don't get me started. Please don't get me started on the Fables ad, because you're trying to get people hooked on a comic or interested in a comic without showing one page of the interiors.
Right. Yeah. And they need to, like, I remember when they had that Secret Invasion ad that I think Marvel had on ESPN, and I only knew it was Secret Invasion because I read comics. If you read comics, you would have no idea. You need to, like, take Superman, Batman, Spider-Man, Iron Man, you know, these characters that the mass public knows about. And you need to show them the comics. You need to show them that you're not crudely drawn or whatever other preconceptions they might have. You need to sell comics to the mainstream audience. Mm-hmm. And you need to show the comics themselves to get them interested. And I think if comic companies were able to get more advertising out there and tell more people that, hey, you can go to your bookstore and you can get, you know, it's not these floppy pieces of paper. You can get a book, a graphic novel of comics. And, you know, I think that would help.
I hate the term floppies so much. I hate the term floppies.
But they tell you...
But
the companies will tell you they can't afford it. They will tell you that it's too much money to advertise in magazines. It's too much money to advertise on TV.
So then why are the only things that we find in comic books ads for their own shit?
I just don't think they're getting the other advertisers there.
Yeah, it costs Marvel nothing to put a Marvel ad in their own book.
Exactly.
But they're not getting other people willing to pay them to put ads in their book.
Part of the reason why things are so expensive is that they're not getting the advertisers that they did, and in part because mainstream Marvel and DC books are sort of squishy. Versus, I'll give you the example of Vertigo books. When I look in a Vertigo book, Vertigo knows who its audience is. It's usually older. It's generally sort of male/female, but, you know, I see video games and cars and stuff like that in Vertigo because they know who they're advertising to. Whereas, you know, who knows who's really reading, Marvel and DC books? At a certain point, like, you would see Skittles and Doritos and, you know, really kiddy video games and Marvel and DC books. But now that everybody's sort of aware that Marvel and DC isn't for kids anymore, nobody knows who they're advertising to. So why am I spending my money on a squishy audience? It's the same trouble that I guess Justice League cartoon went through, is that the advertisers really weren't sure who their audience was, and it was sort of squishy, and it made it hard for that show to keep on continuing, because even though it got good ratings, it wasn't just kids or adults. It wasn't a targeted audience.
And yet, the toys for Justice League still sell to this day, to young and old.
They're not selling to kids. They're not selling to kids, I don't think. I don't see a lot of kids with those toys. I do see adults.
It's too expensive. The prices on these toys, the prices on these, and constantly, you know, they are Marvel and DC are pricing kids. That's another thing they're doing. They are pricing kids out of trying their books.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because you cannot keep, and when I heard Bendis tell me the company line on how we want the books to be that expensive, I wanted to punch my iPod. Because if they kind of fulfill their own prophecy, like, of course, Thor, that went up to $3.99 when you had JMS, who was the popular writer who pretty much built that book back up again. Of course, when he was on the book and it was $3.99, and then they go, okay, he left the book and they put it down to $2.99, but then you put a writer who was basically kind of unknown in the States, and then when they said that the book didn't change in how much it sold, it didn't go up. Of course it didn't go up. You set a tone. You already set it up that book would fail.
Mm-hmm.
That it wouldn't go up again. And I bet you when they put Mac Fraction, who is a little bit more popular, they're going to raise it back up to $4.
They are. It's already been solicited.
Right.
Well, the first issue of Mac Fractions was solicited, but then it was re-solicited as a Gillen issue because of the birth of Mac Fraction's baby.
No, it's the artist.
Oh, it is the artist. Okay, all right. So we have him to blame. Fantastic. That's why that's not done, because that was supposed to start as of this upcoming month, but instead they're having Gillen do, I think, two more issues before they actually start Fraction's run. Doesn't make me very happy at all that you know already the artist is having troubles, because LaRocca's been absolutely consistent. Say what you will about LaRocca's art, at least he's been consistent on Iron Man. You know, that hasn't been late.
Finally
once.
Saw the Josh Holloway in 26.
Yeah, good.
I was like, what are people talking about? And I finally saw it in 26. I was like, oh, I didn't notice that at all.
Son of a bitch.
But, I mean, I didn't notice it until 26 issues in. So
uh-huh.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I don't know, man. I guess
I wouldn't necessarily say it's a bad thing.
You got people picking it
and
up.
And I watch Lost every week.
Damn. But
we're used to.
Well, here's what could be the last conversation. If not, we've got more to talk about, whatever. But here's a catch-22 that I want you guys to think about. With Kick-Ass, came out in theaters, did decently well, enough to warrant a second. The overseas numbers definitely pushed it over that. I know that the numbers on Kick-Ass graphic novels have been great.
Mm-hmm.
They've been up to, I mean, not nearly as good as Watchmen when Watchmen came out, but Watchmen's another example that I can give, where Watchmen, the movie, was pretty similar to what you're going to find in Watchmen, the book. Similar to Kick-Ass, where Kick-Ass, except for a few changes, was pretty much the exact same thing that you'll find in Kick-Ass, the book. So, when you get a very successful movie like Iron Man, and you open up Invincible Iron Man, and it's not the movie, and it's not even close to the movie. It's an entirely different story with entirely different characters that happen to have the same name. Is that a reason for people, for kids in particular, not to pick up comic books? Going with the everything old is new again or everything new is old again thing, if the movies aren't what the comic books are, if they're their own separate universe, why do kids have any reason to pick up the comics?
You're missing the point. The reason that a book like Kick-Ass or Wanted or Watchmen or 300 or even Sin City, to a slightly lesser extent, can do gangbuster graphic novel sales after the movie is because they are single-volume stories.
Contained.
Self-contained. If a kid walks into a store after having seen Watchmen because their parents let them watch Watchmen somehow... then wants to get the book, the guy at the counter can say, here's the book, and that's Watchmen. If they saw Kick-Ass, here's the book. Wanted, here's the book. Sin City, well, there's like six of them, but here's the entire series in six volumes. Kid walks into a store, says, I watched that Iron Man movie and liked it, what do you got? The guy points over and says, well, here's our Iron Man stack. Half of these don't count anymore, but they're kind of important because it's kind of the origin, but they're kind of not because they don't really use them anymore. Half of these have just been written out of continuity. Oh, this doesn't count at all because that was Heroes Reborn. I mean, there's no – where do you begin? How do you get started?
Well, this is an easy – there's an easy answer to this question. There's an easy answer to this question. It's, okay, what is the purpose of a kid coming in wanting to read Iron Man? He's seen the movies, okay? So what does he like about Iron Man? He likes the fast, witty humor, and he likes the modern feel, right? Mm-hmm. So you're not going to give him Heroes Reborn. You're not going to give him Armor Wars. You're not going to give him Demon in a Bottle. You're going to give him Fraction.
Yeah. Yep.
But what is that going to do? It's going to give him what he's looking for in the modern storytelling and the cool shit and the fast, witty humor and the sci-fi stuff.
Yeah, but
and then what it will do as he continues to read it, it will bring him up to speed, hopefully, on the rest of the Marvel U. Okay, what's there talking about Civil War at the end of 25? What did he forget? What are we talking about here? Oh, let's go back or let's continue on. That's the best way to do it. I'm not going to give some newbie a story that's 20 years old. That's retarded.
Well, Brent, let's be real. What
but
the
not, that's going to do
is go on BitTorrent and download that Matt Fraction comic for free.
Yeah,
fucking awesome.
You're making a mistake presuming... by presuming that the kid's going to walk into a comic store looking for comics. There are whole states in the country that don't have a single comic store in the entire state.
You're right.
The kid isn't walking into a comic store. He's walking into a Barnes & Noble. He's walking into a Borders. And he's looking
okay, well,
at their
in,
graphic novel stack.
In Barnes & Noble, they will find the Matt Fraction stuff.
The store
know
could
who
put
Matt
out...
Fraction in. You've got store. Nobody at the right. store who's going to be like, oh, I know who Matt Fraction
Absolutely.
Is because everybody at Barnes & Noble is deeply knowledgeable about Marvel Comics.
But
I mean,
if you,
what
if
they
put,
don't
If you
the,
put a like, now a major motion picture on the cover, that's all you need.
What's well, the kid going to see on the spine when it's standing on its spine in the rack?
Invincible Iron Man Volume 1.
It doesn't get,
Invincible Iron Man Volume 1. That's it.
But look at the
right next to a bunch of other Volume 1 Iron Mans. There's a bunch of Volume 1 Iron Mans out there, and let's not talk about how many Volume 1 X-Men comic books there are.
But you know what? With that attitude,
you're
never going to get any new readers.
No.
I'm not saying that there's not
any
change.
But you look at that BitTorrent site that got taken down not that long ago. There were millions of downloads of Marvel and DC and all types of different books, and it wasn't just adults that were doing that. It was a lot of kids that were downloading this stuff. And then if they go to a Marvel site and they look at how much they're charging for a digital comic, mm-hmm. it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh God, when Marvel announced $3 for a digital download, that is ludicrous.
No, it's
that is ludicrous.
It's not going to last more than a year.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it fails, which it absolutely will, they're not going to say it was stupid of us to charge $3. They're going to say digital comics don't work.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
It's absolutely intentional.
Well, see, here we're going to come back full circle because the reason they're priced so high and the reason that comics are slowly but steadily going up to $3.99 is because they can charge the already plugged-in fan base that much because they know we'll pay it. Mm-hmm. And that's again going back to how they're focusing too much on what they already have instead of making efforts to gain some new readers.
Yeah, I mean, and you know what? I was gonna cut down on my comic books because I was jobless. I fully admit that. That was my main reason for cutting down on comics. Now that I have a job, I can go one of two ways here. Either I can say, okay, I have a job, I can continue to spend the amount of money I was going to spend, or I can say, you know what, how about I knock $20 off anyway, because I'm spending the same amount of money for less comic books now, because of all the $3.99 books, because of all the increases in books that I was previously reading, that they obviously don't want me to continue to read in singles if they're going to continue to raise the price of that. So when it comes out in trade, and yeah, I know the price of trades is going up. You don't have to tell me that. But if it's 50% off at least when it comes out, mm-hmm. then I'll certainly go and pick that up. Because if $25 becomes 50% off of $25, then all of a sudden it's magic. Bam. That's it. You know, I'm saving money right there. $3.99 is not going to be 50% off every single month. It's going to be 40% or it's going to be 35%. And it's just not fiscally possible for somebody to survive on even 40 hours a week and still have money left over to do other things in their life if they're spending $150 on comics every month.
Well, Ian, right. I dropped for the first time in my life. I have dropped, and I have bought Avengers for the last maybe 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
For the first time in my life, I dropped all Avengers books.
Yeah.
It hurt, but I did it. Because it was like, I felt like I wasn't getting the money I was spending on these books. I felt like I wasn't getting my money's worth. And then they were just raising the price. It's like, I'm supporting your books and you're just raising the price on me. And then you're telling me you're raising it because that's the way that I want it.
Yeah.
So it's like, what can you do? Do I stop buying your book? Or, and that will tell you that I still want to support the book, but it's too expensive. Or do I keep buying the book? But then if I do that, then I'm telling you that it's okay to keep raising the price of the book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I'm at that crossroads myself. I'm pretty close to doing that with Avengers, where I'm going to have to just go, I'm going to have to go trade for my sake and for even the sake of lending it to other people. Because I can't, you know, to my average friend, I can't hand them, you know, six comic books, single comic books, and say, here, read this, because I know for sure I'm going to get them back. Three of them are going to be missing, and one of them is going to be shat on by a dog or something, you know? it's not something that you can keep full track of, because it's not one single thing that you can put in your pile and read, you know? And no, I'm not saying that Raph is the person, by the way, even though he has a dog, but you know, it's still something that makes more sense, even more to me now, that trades might very well be the way that I'm going to have to go. It sucks ass, but I'm running out of room, and I can easily buy a new bookshelf, but I can't buy more long boxes because I will be living in a stack of long boxes before I know it. It doesn't make any freaking sense anymore. And if that's the way that you're going to get kids into books, it's going to be via trade paperbacks and digital. Suck on it.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Digital is where single issues will go, and that's all I can really see.
Yep.
Yeah.
There's just no reason to buy digital anymore. Or not digital, but a floppy.
Yeah. The pamphlet is dying.
Yeah. It pains me. It pains me, because I was... If you listen to a show 2 years ago, I was the guy saying, I don't know if I could ever pick up... I don't know if I could ever give up singles. I don't think I could ever do
it. I still say that.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm going to entirely give them up either, but there's a bunch of books that I'm just going to straight out drop. And you know what? By the time the trade is solicited, if I'm not interested enough to pick it up, then that means that I was just picking it up out of habit in the first place.
You know what changed my mind on this whole digital debate was I was on a plane on, on Friday, mm-hmm. coming back from San Diego. And on the long plane, I was walking to the bathroom down the back of the plane, and I saw about six or seven iPads on one freaking plane, Boeing 737. That's a pretty nice, good amount of iPads for this airplane. I was amazed there were so many on there.
Yeah.
But what I saw was people were doing multiple things. They're using the outrageously overpriced internet to surf the web, or they're watching a movie or a TV show or stuff like that on the iPad. And I went to Best Buy the other day and held one in my hand and was playing around with it. And I was like, you know what? This would be really cool as a digital reader. And for a dollar, I would continue to buy everything that I'm buying now. And I would probably get Thunderbolts. I would probably get Power Girl. I would probably get Generation Lost. But I'm not getting those things because they're fucking $4 a piece.
Amen.
So yeah. You want to increase readership, and you want people to support more books. I would probably read more indie books if they were a dollar. But right now, all the only ones I get are the ones we read for Review Corner. So, you know, because I would have that ability just to take it out on the plane and sort through some things or whatever, makes it a whole lot easier than carrying around a stack of comic books in my backpack, which I got to put through the scanner, and you know, makes it heavy. I hate picking out books at cons and putting them in my backpack. It just kills your shoulders.
Yeah, no, come on, man. Well, I ride the train. I ride the train to work. I'm going to be doing that again now, and I'm going to be the schmuck on the train going through single issues, taking them out of his bag, putting them back in, taking them out of his bag, putting them back in. I look like a moron when I do that. I know that. And yet, that's the habit that I've had for the last, 10 years or whatever. You know, that's been my frickin' habit. and I'm kind of getting sick of it.
If they would just take the leap, be brave, be bold, walk with boldness and authority, you know, take the leap and just put out simultaneously the paper version and the digital version. I don't want to wait 6 months after the fucking trade comes out to read your stupid book, Marvel.
That's greed, though. That's total, like, they want to make sure that they suck every last dime.
Absolutely.
From the readership, and that type of thinking is the same type of thinking that will kill a book.
Yeah, I mean, I'm fine with waiting on trades. I'm fine with waiting on trades for 2 or 3 months. I'm perfectly fine with that. But digital should be coming out when it comes out. And Adam and Comfort, you guys know exactly what that's about because you're in the frickin' business and you do that.
Absolutely.
My friend, we started doing digital stuff was telling us we were insane for doing that. We talked to industry professionals and stuff, and they're like, I'd never read a digital book.
Nobody's going to do that. I can't give up the feel of paper in my hands. And we said, give it time.
Right.
Because something's going to come that is going to be like a comic in your hands, but it's going to be digital. And when that comes, that is the beginning of the end for most print media. Right. Because most people are not going to want to – most people don't care. If you look out, anybody under 25 right now gets the majority of their media digitally.
Mm-hmm.
They watch their TV on their computer. They watch movies on their computer. They hook their computer up to their television and do it that way. They read their books on the computer. They read their comics on the computer. They don't care about paper. They do not have nostalgia for bookstores the way that we do. And to them – whatever is going to provide them both the best reading experience and the most economical reading experience is the thing they're going to pursue. Now, they might want to put money down on a trade, but if you want to charge them $4 for one issue of Ultimate Spider-Man, or they could get a big, thick manga trade for like $6, what do you think they're going to choose every time?
The answer is obvious. Yeah, I mean, you go with the thick trade because you're getting more bang for your buck. So what else makes sense but to do that? And with the digital thing, I'll bring up something that you know might be sort of comparable, but might not be. For the past couple of weeks, and you know, I'm doing the same thing on Thursday. Every single week when Doctor Who comes out, I have to download it because BBC America is not carried by Cablevision, my cable provider. So I have no choice. If I want to watch Doctor Who right away, I have to download it. Now, I'd be paying for it if it was offered to me.
Exactly.
But it's not. And that's the same damn thing that you have to deal with digital. Because a lot of people aren't going to wait those 6 months until they finally decide to put it on the internet. They're going to download it illegally, and they're going to read their goddamn comics like they should in the first place. And they're sure as hell not going to put up with not being able to share comic books with their friends because they're too damn afraid to take off any of the copyright protection. Because that's just pathetic.
Well, look at the music industry. The music industry was terrified of selling digital music because they were sure that it was going to destroy everything because pirates would rule the day.
Mm-hmm.
And that's obviously not what happened.
Yeah.
They all ran from it. They were all scared of it. Apple embraced it, and Apple is now the leader in all digital music distribution.
Yeah.
Apple gets all of it because they were the only ones with the balls to see what was coming and take a chance.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Amazon Marketplace is number two, and Amazon Marketplace was MP3 unrestricted from the start, and that's why they're even number two, or else they'd be number seven, you know?
Because you can't sue everybody. It's like they keep trying to do – like they were so – I saw so many professionals clapping how happy they were that they took down the BitTorrent site for the comic, and I'm like, you're not solving the problem of why your book is only making – a certain amount. Yeah. It's only selling a certain amount. You're not solving the problem by shutting down that one site.
Yeah. And I'll be the first to say that I used to be a proponent for Scans Daily. I used to be a proponent. I say used to for a reason. Because, and I don't know how many other people here read Scans Daily or have read it at one point or another, but the people that are on Scans Daily are full of such bile and venom about the stories that they're even scanning in. Like, every single thing that they talk about three quarters at a time is, that's the worst piece of shit I've ever seen. Or what the hell is that, Drech? You know, as opposed to actually sharing things that they want to share with other people, they're putting in, hey, look at that monkey face. Isn't that hilarious? You know, and that's the part of the internet that it's almost like poison, you know, but you can't avoid it. It's there. Yeah. But this is the face of the comic book sharing community is Scans Daily. That's the one that's closest in mind to a lot of people on the internet is Scans Daily. And if you're going to go on there and you're going to read a post and you're going to wonder why these people even bother reading comics, why are you going to bother reading comics?
It's like a digital version of the old comic store. Mm-hmm. Where you walk in and everybody in there is bitter and mean and cynical, so why would you want to hang out there and read comics or buy comics from these people?
Yeah. It's the truth, man. It's the truth. I mean, like, Scans Daily goes after Peter David for shutting them down the first time. So what do? They ban Peter David comics from Scans Daily. that's their solution. You know, for their new version of Scans Daily, no Peter David. If you try to post Peter David, you're immediately banned. That's their way to go around it, as opposed to understanding where he was coming from, and you know realizing that it's not exactly his fault. He just happened to report it to Marvel, and then Marvel sent it to their lawyers, and their lawyers shut their asses down on LiveJournal, and then they moved on. That's what they decided to do. They shut off an entire part of the comics community because that has a PD on it, and we can't possibly do that. You know, that's
yeah, and I think what needs to be done, because I've certainly been guilty of just bashing things and not really, you know, being joyous about the medium.
So, have you been listening to this episode? Shit.
We've gotten testy in this episode too, and I think really what we need to do is we need to just go out there and post about what you love. Stop focusing on. And I mean, we focused on the negative for like the entire episode, but just go out there and post about what you love. Stop, you know, ranting about this and ranting about that, and take some time out to just post about what comics you love and post about why you love this medium so much. And, you know, just be more positive, because I think it's just so easy to be negative about comics that I think that sometimes, no, things are just, there's only glimmers of positivity and people sharing why they love comics, and it's lost in the sea of people, you know, talking about the elements of comics that they hate.
Yeah. It's,
well, I say do both. Yeah. I, if you're going to complain, and I complain about my fair share, but I buy them. Right. You know, like right. I complain about a book that I bought. Mm-hmm. And then, but in the same breath, I will start a fan page about Secret Six because I love that book and I didn't like the sales on the book were going down. Mm-hmm. I wanted to advertise it. So I've made a fan page. Anything. Just I will talk about the book. I will mention it on Twitter. I will, when the interviews come up, I will post it on my Facebook or post the interview. You know, you can do both.
Yeah. Birds of Prey number one was like coming home again for me.
Oh, yeah.
It was like I didn't realize just how much I'd missed it until it was gone. And I just realized that Brent's not even on the call right now. Let me bring him back in. I don't know how much he just missed. Wow. That's when you get in the heat of actual talking, you don't realize sometimes. He might have just dropped like 2 minutes ago, let's say.
Yeah.
If I can get him back. His internet might have gone down. Let's see. Doop-a-doop-a-doop. Which... He just signed off. So once he signs back on, I'll get him back in. But going with, you know, I mean, we've tried to do positives and negatives on this episode. You know, yeah, there have been some negatives in there, but there have been tons of books that we've mentioned on this episode that we like.
Yeah,
you know, it's not just completely negative. And I hope that the internet can do that too sometimes. You know, remind us that you have souls. You know,
well, now you're asking too much of the internet. The internet only exists for people to look at porn and complain about things they know nothing about.
I still don't think that's true. That's the negative. It is the internet.
Negative, yeah. Oh, negative about the internet. Yeah,
I know.
The internet exists solely to share cat videos with each other.
But you know what the internet does do is it connects so many people that love something. Like, I wouldn't have known Ian if it wasn't for the internet. We wouldn't a lot of relationships that have connected. Like, I have actually got a chance to speak to Gail Simone on the internet. You know, it's just so many things. I mean, all the negative stuff we do hear about, but there are so many books that were that sell that made it because of the people that loved a certain book, like Chew. That book, I don't think that book would have made it if it wasn't for the internet.
Hell no.
If it wasn't for podcasts. It was, you know, those type of things. There's so many positive communities. And you do have bad ones, but there are so many positive communities that have gotten books on in people's hands that they never would have tried if it wasn't for this type of networks with Twitter and Facebook and, well, MySpace. But anybody go on MySpace anymore? But all the different things you can connect with. I mean, it is a lot of positive things on the internet.
Most of the people on this call wouldn't know each other. Okay, everybody on this call probably wouldn't know each other. I mean, there is a slight chance I might have ran into Darryl at a New York Comic Con or something, because, yeah, we do live in the same state. But how the hell would I know you, Brent, if not for the internet? You know? Yeah. It's not. You wouldn't be on this call right now if not for the internet. Mm-hmm. It's the truth. I mean, Chris, same thing with you, man. I mean, you know, we got to talking, and bam, there you go. Adam and Comfort. I wouldn't have even been at MegaCon had I not known Brent, so I probably wouldn't have known you two.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, we joke on the internet, and, you know, it's low-hanging fruit and all to talk about geeks on the internet, but we wouldn't have a job right now if it wasn't for the internet.
The internet make our lives possible.
The internet has made it possible for us to live full-time as comic book creators. And without it, that wouldn't happen.
Never.
My one fondest hope about all of this change in the market right now and the move towards digital content is the hope that it would make it possible for more people with good ideas, creative drive, and serious talent to release comics that would not be allowed that chance in the system as it currently exists. Mm-hmm. People who have stories to tell that we would love to read that we will never see because no publisher will give them a shot, but the internet doesn't care. You can try anything that you think will work. And if you can get it out to that audience and find your audience, then you can make anything happen.
Yeah. Well, Brent, you know what? You're a good person to ask because, I mean, you were on the episode where back in the day we were talking about, you know, the future of digital comics and whether or not there even would be paper comics sometime soon. Has your opinion changed at all in the past couple of years on this? I mean, do you feel that I mean, I know that you mentioned that the iPad was eye-opening for you, but will we be entirely digital at any point? Right now? I mean, yeah, you've said yes or no before, but I want to know this very moment, do you think that'll ever happen?
Within the next year, I don't think so.
Okay, but next five?
Marvel has taken a step in the right direction with integrating an online store both for regular computer users and the iPad. They're taking a step in the right direction. However, they are not giving us new content. You're giving us old content. Mm-hmm. That's the one major problem I see with this. DC has, you know, three guys in charge of it that are obviously sharp, but however, we've yet to hear anything at all about an approach to a digital thing. It's just, too soon, or we have something planned, but we're not ready to discuss, or do we have something planned? I don't even know if we have something planned. We're not ready to discuss, even if we do have. Maybe we don't know if we have, you know, they're not ready to discuss the option. And I think, I don't know what the deal with that is. They're backed by a huge media company. So you think that a move to digital would be a lot easier for them than it would be for Marvel, who had the digital thing before they were even bought out by Disney. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So for me, that just boggles my mind.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And with Disney backing them, and Disney wanting to be something that's relevant, I mean, that's why they bought Marvel, is they want, you know, boys to like them, not just girls. You know, I mean, wouldn't it make sense to broaden the horizon of the property by making digital more accessible and increasing their bookstore circulation? Because I know that that's in the cards. I know that they're not just doing stuff with Diamond anymore. They're doing stuff with Disney's own people to hopefully get more comics in bookstores. Because, yeah, as Adam and Cooper said before, and as has been mentioned many times, not every state has comic shops. But every state has at least one bookstore.
But yeah, I think that we will change, like, just like if there wasn't for Napster, and I know the music industry would never want to admit that, and they would hate it. But if it wasn't for Napster, there wouldn't be an iTunes.
Amen.
And so it's up to us. Kids are so smart nowadays. I mean, they will make something available for them. They will set up their own network to read what they want to read. And Marvel and DC will have to limp along and just get with it, just like all those record companies that swore up and down they would never sell their stuff on any kind of digital format. And it got to the point where they had no choice. And that's what's going to wind up happening. When Top Cow starts doing it and Boom starts doing it, and you got companies like PKD Media who are hungry doing stuff like that, and you have people on your podcast right now who are doing their own thing digitally. Right. So you guys are the ones that are going to make them have to do it. You're going to already do it, and then they'll limp along and just have to do it because they have no choice if they want us to buy their product.
Yeah, it's the goddamn truth, man. It's the goddamn truth. I mean, come on. Talk about how smart people are today. I mean, 2 days ago, I was connecting my computer to my television via HDMI and then loading up a program called Tor that set up a proxy that masked my IP so that it would show up as UK, so I was able to watch Eurovision streaming off of BBC. Mm. You know, like you would have explained this to me 5 years ago, and I would have been banging my head up against the wall saying, what the fuck are you talking about?
5 years from now, what do you think is going to happen? All that BBC, they get it, and then we don't get it over here? That mess is going to stop. All that encoding crap that they do.
Yeah.
You can't get, Canada can't get stuff. Because it's an American product, or Europe can't show something on the internet. Mm-hmm. All that stuff will stop.
Yeah, goddammit, I want to watch. I want to watch crazy Germans sing, and that's what Eurovision's all about.
Right.
I'm probably one of three Americans that even knows what the hell Eurovision is. But you know what? Damn it, it's fun.
You'd be surprised.
You heard it.
Yeah. All right. let me take this moment to give final thoughts on everything. How do we keep new again? Because we were talking about how everything is old is new again. And if you want to summarize your thoughts real quick on how we keep the new, that would be beneficial to everybody who only listened to the last 5 minutes of this episode. So, Chris Johnson, we will start with you.
I think if you want to keep things new and keep them new, if you want to introduce new characters and, you know, try to, you know, create a legacy out of some of your superhero characters, I think that you just, if, you know, things don't work out, if the book doesn't sell as high as you wanted it to, you know, and you have to cancel it, and, you know, you might bring back an older hero that, you know, might be more appealing to the bottom line, or you might just have liked that character. You know, don't just kill the new character off, because one day, you know, some new writer could come along and find this character that was introduced, had a series for 20 issues, and then just faded into the background, and he might come up with a killer idea how to use that character in, you know, a title he's writing or in some event that only that character could play a part, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just stop, you know, and I mean, going back to where we began with this conversation with Barry Allen, you know, Barry Allen, you know, a reason a lot of people are upset with him coming back is because when Barry Allen died, death meant something in comics.
Yep.
And death doesn't really mean that much anymore these days because, you know, you kind of just expect it. And I think if, you know, you just, instead of just keep on sacrificing the newer characters when you need to, you know, create a twist or create a, you know, shocking moment within your book, just, you know, pause for a second and just, you know, let that character stay within the library until somebody's going to come along and make that character a star player in the universe.
But Chris, Geoff Johns says dead is dead.
Which, and that perfectly explains why the first page of Brightest Day was a bird dying. Because and then being brought back to life because dead is dead.
It's a 4-issue mini of that bird. He's coming back.
It'll be $3.99.
The rise and fall of the bird.
Yeah, it rises and it fell. Bird Rebirth with art by Ethan Van Sciver. All right, over to Daryl.
My thing, don't let corporate run the whole thing. Don't let corporate be your creative side of your product, because corporate will kill your company. Corporate will squeeze every idea and kill it to the point where no one likes it. And that's something that has been going on too many times. Every time I keep hearing, you can't do this, and then you ask why. Why can't I do this with the character? And they can't give you a good reason. That means you need to be open to the people around you. You need to be open. There are so many people out here that are hungry with good ideas that want to get into the business. They should open up. I mean, right now it looks like Marvel and DC are closing those doors more and more, making it harder and harder for people to get in there and to try to just create something new or try to put life into the products, into these characters that they have grown up loving, and they want to share what they think would be good stories, just like a young Geoff Johns did, just like a young Brian Bendis did, and a Mark Millar. So don't shut yourselves off like the music business did until other people had to come in and pretty much do their own thing. So just let people be creative and embrace ideas. Even if you don't agree with them, at least have dialogue with people to see why you don't agree with them.
Hear, hear. Hear, hear. Mr. Cassina.
I think the main thing is you just can't be afraid to take risks. These companies need to be bold, walk with boldness and authority, and just, if they have the confidence that what they're doing is going to be cool or what they're doing is going to be awesome, and that comes out to readers, whether it's a new digital distribution or a new storyline or a new character, that's going to come off to the readers. But what is the problem is that they don't have the confidence to tell these readers that this is going to be good or anything. They don't have any, it's like almost like they don't have any confidence in the product at all. And rather than confidence, they're giving it a lot of hype. So I would say that they need to have confidence in their product, and the only way they can do that is by putting out the best product or being daring with a $1.99 digital distribution comic store that comes out the day of. You know, even if it wasn't everything, if you offered your biggest releases, or not even your biggest releases, offer your smallest releases. Put up Booster Gold number 33 the day it comes out. Because, you know, that story needs a bump. Put out Power Girl. Put out these lesser-known character books that aren't selling, you know, 45,000 units or whatever it is. That, you know, put them out there for a dollar. More people will try them. I'll go back to reading Booster Gold if it was a dollar online. You know, enough said. Because I'm not reading it right now for three freaking dollars, written by guys who I'm not particularly interested in. But for a dollar, I'll read it. If I'll dig the first issue, I'll keep going for a dollar.
I understand where you're coming from. I'm close.
I might read all the X-Men books if they were a dollar, and they're coming out concurrently, but I don't.
But if they were a dollar, then you'd be spending $10 on it.
Well, I wouldn't be reading all of them, but I'd be reading enough of them that I could read whatever's going on right now.
Yeah, yeah, and by the way, that pisses me to hell off because I don't read New Mutants, and I don't read X-Men Legacy, and they're putting important chapters to Second Coming in those books. So when I pick up my Uncanny X-Men and my X-Force, I have absolutely no idea what the hell's going on, which is really pissing me off. But that's another story for another time, I think. I'll wrap up my thoughts real quick on this, and then I'll give Adam and Comfort their time, and then we'll wrap this baby up. What this industry needs is more James Robinsons of 10 years ago. Guys that look at old characters like Starman and think, I could make something really good out of this. You know, I could make this character that was never really anything big and turn it into a dynasty. I could make it a story that everybody remembers. I can make a character out of absolutely nothing. I can make his son something huge. And then when the time is done and the story is told, that's it. And then I just move on to something else. Move on to something else as good and go from there. What the industry does not need and I love you, James Robinson, but I'm going to bring you up for this, is the James Robinson of today that takes characters, puts them in a book, and makes them extreme with an X, and tries to make things edgy in order for things to grab new readers and make them think, hey, we're hip and we're extreme and we're dangerous. Don't mess with us. Anybody could die at any point. These are the sort of books that we really, really need. No, that's not what the industry needs in order to stay relevant. Okay, because that's just telling people that everything's going to be a gimmick and you're not going to get stories out of this. You're just going to get shocking moments. Okay, we don't need shocking moments. We need story. And that's what I hope we're going to start getting out of DC and Marvel now that Brightest Day is looking pretty good, you know, with Birds of Prey back and Secret Six still turning out what it turns out every month. And yeah, it's funny I mentioned Secret Six when I'm talking about, you know, shock and awe, but they're villains that actually have heart, unlike Titans that doesn't. So that's
here.
That's another story. But, you know, just books that feel like stories and not shock and awe. That's all you need in order for people to continue reading and feel like they've actually gotten the money that they spent, well spent, and that you deserve the money that people are giving you. That's all you need. And to finish us off, Adam and Comfort.
Oh, my, you guys have done such a good job.
You say your thing, because I've got a very small thing probably that I'll
I think what I'm going to focus on is twofold. First, companies, put creators on books who deeply care about the characters they're writing or drawing. Because when a creator gives a damn about the property they're on, they're going to give you better work. Don't just put somebody on because they're a hot new talent or because they sell books by having their name on the cover, because that's when you start getting mistakes or things that seem wildly out of character or things like that. You wouldn't need to bring Barry back if you had put somebody on Wally's book who gave a damn about that character and had a good story to tell. Rather than doing these big events, find the creators who are hungry to do these characters, who will do them well, but who are not such rabid fanboys that they're afraid to do anything different with them. And then I speak to the buyers, the buying public, the readers out there. Do not give them your money for books you don't enjoy. I heard somebody say the shame about Marvel going up to $4 is I'm not going to stop buying four, but I will stop buying independent books that I like way more. That is backwards thinking that is going to kill the books that need your money and reward the companies that are pissing you off. Use your money to reward the people that you want to support, not just the characters you read when you were 12. Spend wisely, because it is the only vote you have. Complaining on the internet, they don't read. Complaining on blogs, they don't read. Start a podcast about how much you hate that comic. They don't listen. They don't care. Because any interest is better than no interest. And even bad press is good press when you have no industry magazine supporting you, wizard. The internet is not enough. Your money is all you have. Buy the books you like. And if you don't enjoy anything Marvel and DC is doing right now, open your eyes and look elsewhere. Because there are tons of brilliant books being written right now. Brilliant books. Better than anything you're going to find in Marvel or DC that are being released by people you've never heard of. So give it a try. And that's all I got.
I really think that's what I was going to say, is please give other books, wherever they might be, a try. Even if you're just going and BitTorrenting books and looking through what's in the BitTorrent to see what you might like and what you might want to support, do that.
And then turn around and give your money to those people. Because they actually need your money to keep going.
Right. What comics really need to have happen is they need to break away from being a two-company system, and they need to be able to make lots of books in lots of different genres for lots of different people, because this little niche audience is not working, and that's a setback.
But the only way that changes is if you take your money elsewhere.
Right. And you introduce other people to other books in the realm of comics.
Be a fan. Don't just be a critic.
All we are saying is give good comics a chance.
Exactly. That summed it up right there. This is perfect.
Paraphrasing Michael Jackson. Thank you.
Ah.
And for that matter, and for that matter, if people don't want to give comics their money, just give them to me instead. All right. Okay. So. And one more time, we're sponsored by DCB Service, Discount Comic Book Service, dcbservice.com. Wolverine, number one, special discount of 75% off, only 99 cents this month. Written by Jason Aaron, penciled by Renato Geddes, covered by Jay Lee, the return of Wolverine to his own series after Dark Wolverine took it over for a while there. And even Dark Wolverine is getting himself a new series, so they're just resetting everything. You got Dark Wolverine on one side, Wolverine on the other, whatever, good enough. Mouse Guard, Black Axe number one, is the indie pick this month for 45% off, only $1.92. David Peterson returns to the world of Mouse Guard for more Mouse Guard action. Enjoy it. And Freedom Fighters number one, written by Palmiotti and Gray, art by Travis Moore and Trevor Scott, only 50% off on DCBS, $1.49, and an ongoing for the Freedom Fighters. And make sure to use the promo code CT8, that is CT8, to get an additional 8% off on your first order with Discount Comic Book Service, dcbservice.com, for all of your comic book needs. And we thank you, DCBS, for sponsoring Comic Timing. On that note, I think we've said literally everything. This has been a fantastic episode. But before we wrap things up and get everybody's links on there, I want to mention a couple of things real quick. First off, new books, hopefully by the time this episode is out, new books will be up on DCBS, so make sure to go to discountcomicbookservice.com for all your discount comic book needs. Also, a note that Sean Pryor of PKD Media has been nominated for 2 Parsec Podcasting Awards.
Yes!
So I would like to give a huge, huge, huge congratulations to Mr. Sean Pryor of PKD Media. PKDmedia.com, the PKD Media podcast. Fan of the show, contributor to the show. Sean's a great guy who hates Jell-O pudding, and I love him. So,
and Auto Man. Love him.
So big props to Mr. Sean Pryor, and don't ever get him started on a Bill Cosby rant. It will never end. The other thing that I wanted to mention is we're getting dangerously close here. We did just get our anniversary flip by without even mentioning it. So we're another year older here on Comic Timing. So yippee-ki-yay to that. No fanfare this time. We're just happy to be here for another month and continue listening, and we'll continue doing episodes. That's really all I have to say. We began this show back in April of 2006. And it's now June of 2010. So not only does that make me feel older, but that makes this show feel like it's still got some legs to it. And hopefully you guys feel the same way. So
old for this shit yet?
I'm not too old for this shit. I'm getting there, but I ain't too old for this shit yet. If Daryl ain't too old for this shit, I ain't too old for this shit.
There you go.
and on that note, Mr. Withers and Ms. Comfort, if you would like to pimp your wares, now would be the time.
Excellent. You can find everything we've got on www.uniquescomic.com. We have the all-free, all-monthly anthology series Unique Tales just started, running strong. Brand new story coming out next Wednesday.
And you can read the story with Brian J. L. Glass's writer.
Harvey Award winning Brian J. L. Glass has a story just released a few weeks ago. You can get the first issue of the Uniques comic, 36 pages, absolutely free at the website. And in just a month's time, we release the first issue of our brand new miniseries, Rainbow in the Dark. So we've got a lot coming and a lot coming up, and you can follow it all at uniquescomic.com, or you can follow us on Twitter at The Uniques.
Man, what a sales pitch, sweetheart.
Hi-o.
Act now and you'll receive steak knives at no extra cost.
Right. Also, I may say, you can get all the issues of The Uniques for 99 cent downloads.
But that's not all. Wait, there's more.
There should be more. Jeez.
It slices. It dices. You can use these digital files to make julienne fries.
Oh, dear.
I totally thought we were done.
No, we're almost done, man. We're getting close. I'm wrapping up. I just wanted to ask real quick if you got any BK's bullets or anything.
No.
No? Nothing in the pipeline?
Nothing in the pipeline.
All right, cool. You can go now if you would like.
See you later, users.
Brent Casino, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, all the week.
I said users, not losers.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good.
It said subscribers.
Hey.
Well, that's good. That's good. That's good. Listeners, users, and abusers. That's what we are. All right. Have a good night, Brent.
See you guys later.
All right. Okay, and now that he's done pimping his wares, Chris Johnson, where can they find all your archive?
Of the Spidercast? I don't even know if it's still up.
Don't you have, like, other shit lying around, too?
Nah, not really.
What about that 52 thing you did for John back in the day?
Oh, yeah, you can go to comicbookpagepodcast.com and talk about most of the DC miniseries Final Crisis, one of the greatest comic books of all time. And I guess you can give amazingspidercast.libsyn.com a shot and see if you can still download that show.
It's still up. It's still up. I just went to it just now. Episode 79, posted on October 12th, 2008.
Well, there you go.
It's a slow release schedule, that's all.
Yeah. We're going by decade, so should have another one out there sometime soon.
Nice, nice. Yeah, once that marriage gets reinstated in another 10 years from now, you'll start doing the show again.
Yeah, I probably will. So, yeah, last episode 2008, so in 2015, episode 80. Yeah, that's like, that's, you see, I'm going to try to compete with The Wizard of Oz and Return to Oz for the largest gap between a movie and its sequel. So nice. This will be the largest gap in podcasting history between an episode and the next episode.
As long as it's better than Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
I don't know. By 2015, maybe me or Jen would have been abducted by an alien. I don't know. We'll have to mark your calendars for 2015, and we'll see what happens, guys.
Man, no. I know Canada's weird, but I didn't think it was that weird.
Well, they got a refrigerator in it, I'm good.
Yeah.
And
Nuke in the fridge in 2015. That's the tagline, baby.
I would love for there to be a story in Marvel continuity with Nuke in a fridge.
Oh, that was fun.
That's what the Jeff Parker would do.
Oh, God.
I should tweet that to him and see if he'll do it.
And last but certainly not least, Daryl, what you got?
I'm on Need to Fix This Hideout, and I'm on Comic Book Roadshow, and my personal baby is No Apologies, where everyone is invited. If you have Skype, every Saturday we get together and we talk comics. We talk, if you want to pimp something, a book that you love, we talk about that. If you have a complaint about the industry, we talk about that. Just a bunch of us just sitting around just talking about things that we love. So you can hit me up on Skype at the voice 12341 or contact me on my email at noapologies1225@gmail.com and you can be on a podcast.
Awesome. And a reminder out there that Comic Timing finally has a Facebook website, because it's not like it took long enough. We had a group, but nobody ever posted on it. So I finally decided to make an actual page, and we have doubled the amount of people subscribed to the page than we ever had for the group, proving how beneficial Facebook groups are. So definitely go ahead and like Comic Timing.
Oh, and Ian, I'm sorry, I just had to throw one thing and I forgot.
Go ahead.
The Fixer's Hideout will make it to its 150th episode this coming week. I don't know when the show is coming out, but
nice.
150 episodes.
All right. Fine. I'll make it to an episode recording eventually. Jeez.
It's a call-in. You got it. We're doing a call-in, so you can call in for that one.
All right, cool.
Party at Ian's place.
Woo!
Where's the pizza?
Hey, we got some pretty good pizza around here. I'll go tell you on San Remo. Good stuff. But Adam and Comfort and myself will be at Otakon. So yippee-ki-yay.
Yeah, and Otakon will be at Heroes this weekend, too. So
fantastic.
We leave tomorrow for Heroes.
Yeah, I doubt this episode will be out by the weekend, so they were at Heroes.
No, I wish I was going.
Well, we were at Heroes.
We were at Heroes, and then we'll be at many, many other cons to come.
Fantastic. All right. And on that note, the email address for Comic Timing is comictiming@gmail.com. Don't forget to check out the forums over at comicforums.com, graciously hosted by Comic Geek Speak guys over at comicgeekspeak.com, and are hopefully up. Hopefully. We are proud members of the Comics Podcast Network over at comicspodcast.com, and we're also members of the League of Comic Book Podcasts over at comicbooknoise.com/league. Please join us on Facebook, as previously mentioned, and send us your iTunes reviews and shop at DCBS. And a big thank you to everybody on this call, last minute, first asked earlier in the day, and first off, Adam and Comfort, thanks for being on an episode that doesn't take place at a con.
Hey!
It was great. We actually had delightful.
I did as well, and I'm glad you guys had a good time. And Chris, welcome back. You're welcome back anytime.
I had a great time, and thanks for having me on. And, you know, anytime you need a last-minute guy, just post up there on Facebook, and I'll try to make it if I can.
You seem to be good at that. Most of the times you wind up on this show, it's really last minute, so... Yeah,
I guess that I'll have to be my official Comic Timing nickname now. The last minute guy, that's me.
Yeah, right. Last minute guest, Chris Johnson. And Daryl, look.
Thank you very much.
And as always, there's always time for comics.
Yeah, congratulations on the new job, man.
Yeah, I just literally got confirmed, like, at this point about 12 hours ago. Yes, thank you. I gave up the yarmulke and everything, and now I'm good. So, you know, I just got to grow back a foreskin, and then everything's all set. No,
I don't think I ever did that.
Yo, Daryl.
Hello.
What up?
How are you today?
I am good. How are you?
I am fine.
I can't tell if you're Darth Vader or George Takei.
Oh my.
Oh my. Hello.
Oh my.
Alright, so the gang's all here. I think we all know what we're talking about. Not much of an explanation on that. Just whether it's a good idea or a bad idea that things are going back to what they were 20 years ago.
Oh, I thought we were talking about if you mix spam with jerky, what would happen?
You get spurky.
Brent had mentioned to me something about Brand New Day.
Yes, actually, it's going to be the all Brand New Day episode just for you, Chris, because we know how much you love talking about that.
No.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it... oh, Jesus.
Yes?
Really?
Yes, yes, my son? What would you like to say?
He just said, Ian is fine, thanks.
Well, he was a Jew, after all.
Yeah, that's true, and I think that's part
that's
of
the
joke.
Internet. And all that delay, huh?
Mr. Cassina.
What am I answering?
The square root of 57 divided by 4 times 7 equals... No. Alright, Brent's cell died again.
Alright.
So I'm gonna get him back in real quick here. And then we'll actually really end the episode. I don't even know how much of what he he's missed now. God damn it. This is getting annoying. Yo. Wait. Damn it.
Back up, yeah.
Oh.
Yo. Yeah. And we're out.
Good night, Ed.
Awesome.
Fantastic.
Nice. There.
2 hours and 45 minutes.
Gracious.
I do 5 hours every week, so I can't say anything. That's nothing. I do this in my sleep.
Adam Comfort, thank you for sticking with us with the crazy internet 5-second thingy.
And it's frustrating. We apologize again if we seem like we're trying cutting people off too much. We generally try to be more polite than that.
Yeah, the internet is the enemy here.
Not you, it's the internet and joke aside. Not you.
Gasana!
Old mitt.
That's better.
That's
a little better. You also didn't get a southern twang in it like you did before.
Yeehaw. Giddy up.
You caught yourself doing that.
Nah, I didn't really do that. I didn't really know that I did that. Although, I'm going to record everything with southern twang now.
Are you still recording?
Yeah, technically I am, which means it's probably going to go in the back of the episode right here. Uncle Ruckus. Yeah. Yeehaw.
You're racist.
I am a racist man. That is actually accurate.
Put that in the back end.
I'm racist. Daryl's on this episode and I'm racist. How the hell did that happen?